Hello and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast. Weekly for 3 weeks in a row.
Exactly, yeah. We can maybe almost have earned this name now.
With Jonathan Lack.
And Sean Chapman.
How you doing, Sean?
I am doing very good, Jonathan.
That's good.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes. So, we've been busy lately, but there's some stuff to talk about. This is not going to be as busy an episode as the last month or so.
Yeah, but certainly not the E3 one.
No, not the E3 one, not the 3.5 hour one we did where we talked about Watch Dogs, Mario Kart, X-Men, and like 18 right, other things yeah. at once. So yeah, but there's some stuff to talk about. We'll do some stuff, we'll do some news, we got a little bit about movies, a little bit of E3 cleanup to do. But our main topic today is going to be the Destiny First Look Alpha, which ran over the weekend into Monday a little bit.
Yep.
And if you don't know what Destiny is, it's Bungie's new first-person shooter MMO kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The world got its first look at it over the weekend. PS4 owners, there was an alpha program. At first, it was just for a select number of people, then they kind of opened it to everybody. So Sean and I both played the shit out of that.
Yes. That has been my past, like, 4 days.
Yes, so lots of thoughts on the Destiny Alpha. I think it's going to be kind of interesting. We're going to have talked about Destiny extensively before we ever are holding the game disc.
Yeah.
You know? Because there's also going to be the beta next month to talk about. So, in any case, this is exciting. This is a game I think both of us said it's pretty much our most anticipated game of this year.
Yeah.
So, lots to talk about there. We'll also give you some final thoughts on Watch Dogs, because I've finished the campaign and played about everything I'm going to play in that game. I think Sean's probably... He hasn't finished the campaign, but you're probably done with that game for a while, right?
Probably, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to go back to it or not.
Okay, so that'll be a brief topic, but I want to talk about it a little bit, mostly to make fun of the story.
Sure.
But first, Sean.
Me.
What stuff have you been up to? Any movies, any games, anything to talk about?
I was playing this thing. It was called the Destiny Alpha, and I played that. And I played it some more.
All right.
And I played it a little bit more.
So that's been your week.
Then they shut it down on me. And so now I'm planning on going to Bungie and just taking it back from them.
Okay. Or asking for a job, like, just playing Destiny.
Sure, yeah.
I want to be a Destiny playtester.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'll just keep on playing the Devil's Lair over and over and over again. That's what I've been playing on the weekend anyway. So it's like, if you just pay me to do that, I'll tell you if there are any bugs.
All right, sounds good. Well, let me see. Let me talk about some movies I've seen here.
Right.
We got some reviews of these on the site. But this weekend was an interesting weekend for movies because there were two sequels that came out. Very different. 22 Jump Street, hard R comedy. How to Train Your Dragon 2, DreamWorks animated movie. Not hard R.
Probably, I assumed so. Yeah, I haven't seen either of them, but...
Okay, good sequels. I mean, it's funny because I tweeted this before I saw either movie because I just thought it was funny. So many of these reviews were invoking the term, the rare sequel that is better than the original. And I'm like, this weekend, you fucking idiots, is proving that's not a rarity.
That seems to actually be kind of... It's the third one is always the one that fucks up, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's kind of the general trajectory, you know?
Yeah, and it's just... You know, yes, we had The Amazing Spider-Man 2 this summer. That was terrible. This was also a year that gave us Captain America 2, a great X-Men 7 or whatever we're on.
Yeah.
The Raid 2 was a phenomenal sequel. And this weekend we got How to Train Your Dragon 2 and 22 Jump Street, two films that I think most everyone is agreeing are better than the originals. And the originals are very highly regarded. And, you know, I've seen both of them. They're both fantastic. I don't know if I would say 22 Jump Street is better than the original, but it's absolutely at that same level for me. They're pretty much qualitatively interchangeable. And, you know, that's just interesting to me because I feel like every time a good sequel comes out, people act like it's such a surprise. That's not a surprise. This isn't the 1980s when Home Alone 2 and Ghostbusters 2 were the standard for sequels, you know? Like, I feel like nowadays, especially for comic book movies, and neither of these are comic book movies, but especially for comic book movies, how often is the first film the best in the series? Almost never.
I'm trying to think of, like, I guess Iron Man is one.
Although if you tie Avengers into all that, if you want to, then it gets weird. But
sure,
like,
but
if it's just solo Iron Man movies, yeah, most people would probably be
Superman. Iron Man. The first Superman is still the best Superman.
Yes, definitely within the Christopher Reeve series, there's no question about
or
that.
Or within all the Superman movies, there's still no question.
Okay. But yeah, so it's like, you know, we made our list of the top 10 comic book movies, and I think our top fives were all sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just something weird. And I think, you know, How to Train Your Dragon 2, I saw that yesterday and I was blown away. I was not a big fan of the first How to Train Your Dragon, and I was the only person on the fucking earth who thought that.
I didn't see this one. I know basically nothing about it. My question to you is, did they not learn How to Train the Dragon in the first one? And do they seriously actually have to? Is this still a movie about training dragons? Or do they just still... Is everyone just awful at naming movies? And should I just kill myself? Because it's like, what is the point anymore if nobody can come up with a good name for a movie?
To be fair, the majority of the characters learn to train their dragons in the first film. But the second film is about a bad guy who he trains dragons, but in a horrible way that makes the world more violent and whatnot.
So it should be called How Not to Train Your Dragon.
Sure, that would be a better
sequel to How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Which seems like maybe that would go the other way around, but sure.
Yeah. In any case, it's very good. Like I said, the first one didn't blow me away. I might have to go back and check it out again, because the second one did. It's a very, very good sequel. In fact, you know, I could see the argument for this being the best sequel we've gotten this year. I wouldn't necessarily say that myself, but it's really good. It's the best CGI animation I've ever seen in a movie, by far. And it's because mostly they really do use, you know, physical photographic principles in it. It's Roger Deakins is the visual consultant on it, and I guess he worked very heavily on that. If you don't know who Roger Deakins is, he's the Coen Brothers cinematographer and has worked with a lot of other people. He's one of the great living cinematographers, and you can feel his influence on this because it's the first CGI movie, honestly, I would say, where it looks like they took a camera into this world and shot it, and it has that artistic quality of framing and frame dimension and those kind of things. It's gorgeous. It's got great voice acting, really good storytelling, great movie. 22 Jump Street, 21 Jump Street was fucking great. Hilarious. Really, really good. Unexpected surprise. 22 Jump Street, same kind of thing, which even more surprising because comedy sequels definitely don't work.
Oh, yeah, no. That's like if there are two genres you don't want to make sequels to, it's comedy and horror.
Yeah. Comedy sequels are just usually awful, and I think, you know, the starting point for why 22 Jump Street works is that it is constantly making fun of the idea of sequels. That is, the plot of the movie is...
Nice.
They start out, the two main characters try to do something different with their careers, and they fuck everything up, so their bosses say, look, we're giving you more money, but you have to do the same thing you did last time. And so it's very self-aware where they're doing the same plot as the first movie, but, you know, very quickly, things start to subvert, and those subversions are what the movie's about. And I think it's also about some thematic ideas in the real world about how, you know, people get in a rut of trying to do the same thing over and over, which is also how Hollywood tricks us with sequels,
That's cool. That's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
And I have to watch these now.
You might. I mean, you should. They're really, really good. Like I said, I think 22 Jump Street has a poorer supporting cast, and I think the third act is... I wish they had just gone a tad bit farther in terms of subversion and that kind of thing. But it's a funnier movie than the first one. That never happens with comedy sequels. But this movie was at least, you know, one magnitude funnier to me. I laughed pretty much nonstop. There were parts where I couldn't breathe, tears in my eyes. It's just hilarious. They really know how to use their cast and everything. So that's good. Both of those, there are full reviews up on jonathanlack.com. Go ahead and read those. More detail. Both spoiler free, so that's good.
So since you've now seen two movies that tell you how to train your dragon, do you feel fully equipped that if in real life you did somehow encounter some sort of dragon, that you could train it and tame it and then potentially ride it and, you know, take over the world or something?
No, like The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, these movies do not really give you a guide to what they promise.
But, I mean, well, to be fair, with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, like, that's a reference to a thing that exists in the world of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So I think the title of the book doesn't necessarily mean... But there's no point in How to Train Your Dragon where it's like, oh, no, this title is actually a reference to this manual that exists in the world of How to Train Your Dragon that tells you how to train your dragon called How to Train Your Dragon. And then there's a sequel to that book called How to Train Your Dragon 2 that's featured in the sequel How to Train Your Dragon 2.
I do not think those are good titles for movies. Yes.
I mean, the first one's fine. The first one's fine, but if you make a sequel, you can't call it How to Train Your Dragon 2. It's like you already have a great structure in the way that title is made up that it's like, play around with what the title says. Like, it can still clearly be another entry in the How to Train Your Dragon franchise, but it doesn't have to have a 2 at the end. Like, have it be something else that you're how to doing something else with your fucking dragon. How to fuck shit up with a goddamn dragon, motherfucker. The sequel to How to Train Your Dragon.
And that could have been the title of this movie.
Exactly.
Yes. Or they could have gone How to Train Your Dragon, but with a 2 replacing the T-O.
If you're going to just make a shitty title, you might as well go full bore and make like a really shitty title.
All right. Well, in any case, the only other movie I've seen recently is the Tom Cruise film Edge of Tomorrow. Well, it's a Doug Liman film. Tom Cruise is the star with Emily Blunt.
And all movies that Tom Cruise are in are just Tom Cruise movies.
Sure. I mean, here's the thing. I think Tom Cruise is in a really good moment of his career where just every year a Tom Cruise action movie comes out and it's very good, very solid. I have fun with it, and I can just reliably depend on every year I'm going to get a fun Tom Cruise movie. They're not going to be, like, amazing, groundbreaking stuff, but this is in that mode, like, of, you know, the recent Mission Impossibles, Jack Reacher, Oblivion, now Edge of Tomorrow. It's just, you know, they're not the greatest movies that have ever been made, but, like, Edge of Tomorrow, it's very fun. It's got a great aesthetic. It's well-directed. It's Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt are really good in it together. I think, you know, it's probably not my favorite of that recent Tom Cruise action subgenre. Sure. I liked Oblivion more. I thought that was actually a very good sci-fi movie. I thought that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, I mean, this is good. I like Tom Cruise. He's one of my favorite, you know, movie stars out there. I just think he does good work, and he generally makes good movies. So, it's good. It flopped. So, go see it if you want to see it. It's too bad it flopped.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you release against a young adult movie, which they did with The Fault in Our Stars, and that made like $1 million, like, not 1 million, that would be nothing. They made like $60 million in a day or something. Yeah. So,
well, that's what happens when you release a movie that I actually kind of wanted to see, but it was on a weekend that I was really fucking busy, so I didn't have a chance to see it.
Sure.
So it's fuck them.
Yeah. All right. No, you should see it. It's a good movie. Yeah.
It's like they should have known what my schedule was and planned accordingly. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. Like, you should have, the day before the movie came out, they should have called you and been like, Sean, can you see this?
Yeah, and I would have been like, no, man, I'm busy this weekend. Can you just move it back to next Friday? And then been like, yeah, sure, we can do that. That's okay. Fine. It's not like we have a massive marketing, you know, machine behind anything of this that we spent money on. We can just move it back for you. And I would have said, great, thanks, guys.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah.
One other piece of site business stuff.
Okay.
All right? So this podcast, I think for the foreseeable future, will be coming out on Wednesdays. I think it's a good day.
I would not dedicate ourselves
I'm not to dedicating. Anything. I'm thinking
that there is a chance, there is a 1 in 7 chance that if the podcast does come out, it will come out on a Wednesday. At least a 1 in 7 chance.
I think the mode we're in right now of recording it on Tuesday, releasing it on Wednesday is a good mode. I think we'll be able to hold that up for a while. If not, we'll you know, let you know. But because of that, my series Essay Day, which I've been working on, it comes out Wednesdays. There's been some good stuff lately that I know people have really enjoyed. There was a James Bond essay, the Borat essay, which has been on the site before, but I put that back up. That's a fun one. But in any case, those are coming out on Wednesdays. I think I might move that to Thursday or Friday to make room for the podcast so we don't have too many things going out at once, but we'll see. Just if you read that column, it might be coming out later.
All right.
All right. Sean, I think I just saw a mouse run across the floor of your apartment.
Yeah, I know. He came in yesterday, last night, and I need to figure out a way to get rid of him.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's a problem I'm aware of.
Yeah, okay. There's a Home Depot like a block from here.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, mouse trap.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. All right, well, in any case, I was giving that explanation, and I see a mouse run across. It's sure. Like, I'm not scared of mice or anything. It's just something you don't see all the time. All right, so let's see. Let's talk some news, Sean.
Okay.
Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
It's the news.
All right. So, Sean.
Yes, me.
DC.
Yes.
They're making a movie called Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
You want to remind us at the stupidity of that really quick?
It's bad. It's all bad. It's a bad title. It's a bad idea. Yeah. It's all bad. All
right. Well, in any case, last week, there was a report that came out from Nikki Fink, formerly of Deadline. She's kind of a terrible person, but she does get sources. And her sources are telling her that DC has a very, very ambitious release plan for the next couple of years. Starting with Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, May 2016. We know that's coming out. I will note that the article I am reading from here wrote Batman versus Superman because I guess the author, and I completely understand, could not keep with just writing the V period.
Yeah, like I think I would struggle with that personally as well.
I would too, yes, exactly. It's like if you had to write about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. every week, I would not do the S period.
Oh, yeah,
period.
Yeah, the acronym, yeah.
Exactly. So in any case, this is their release schedule. I'll read it out, then we'll break it down. Okay, Sean?
Okay.
So, they're starting May 2016 with Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Yes.
All right. Then the plan, according to this rumor again, is that in July of 2016 will be their Shazam movie.
Okay, yeah, because that's, you know, that's the kind of character that really gets asses in seats. Fucking Captain Marvel, a.k.a. they just very recently renamed him. I mean, a couple of years ago, they renamed him to Shazam.
Captain Marvel?
Captain Marvel. Like, for those who don't know, Captain Marvel is...
Not a Marvel character.
There is a Marvel character named Captain Marvel, but there are two Captain Marvels. One of them is owned by DC, although he was not originally created by DC. He was originally created by another publisher that went defunct in the Golden Age and then got bought by DC. and Captain Marvel, also known as Shazam, is a he's a boy named Billy Batson who's like 10 years old or something, and basically gets his power where when he says Shazam, he gets struck by lightning, and he has like the wisdom of like Shazam is an acronym that's like the wisdom of Solomon and like okay. bullshit, and so he's like he's basically Superman, but he was a kid.
All right,
yeah.
So we'll break these down when we get through them. Let's just read the titles first.
Nobody knows who the fuck Shazam is, so I thought I'd need to just say it.
No worries. Christmas 2016 is when they've got their Sandman film planned. Now, obviously, that will not be going into the larger DC universe. We'll talk about this later, though. Justice League, May 2017. Then, July 2017, they want a Wonder Woman movie out. Standalone Wonder Woman movie. Then, Christmas 2017, an untitled Flash and Green Lantern team-up movie.
Okay.
Then, May 2018, Man of Steel 2. And that's what they got so far. So, Sean, let's break these down.
Right, okay.
Okay, so... Okay. This is just so weird. So, they're starting with Batman v... Okay, I want to say again. This is a rumor so far because nothing official has been announced, and I do not believe this. And I'll explain that as we go through. I do not believe this because I do not believe this is literally physically possible for them to make these movies.
I effectively agree, unless they've come up with some, like, new crazy, like, alternate dimensions where they can make these movies in, like, a different world and then just bring it over here or something.
The only thing I do want to talk about this, though, is that, you know, if I had to bet money, I would not bet on this. I don't believe it. However, I think it's worth talking about because this is not appreciably more desperate than anything else they've been doing.
They did name a movie Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Right. So you are right.
Yeah. So it might be true, you know? All right. But, okay, so they're doing Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. That's when they're kicking off. They're introducing all the characters. We're even hearing now that Aquaman is going to be in it.
Yeah, was some Game of Thrones dude or something?
Yeah, it's...
Jason Momoa, is that
his name? Jason Momoa, he played Khal Drogo on Game of Thrones. He's a really fun actor, but...
Doesn't look at all like Aquaman, which is fine, because who gives a fuck about Aquaman?
He looks like Hercules or something. Yeah. Or Conan, who he played.
I mean, if you're going with Aquaman-type characters, he looks a lot more like Namor the Submariner from Marvel's universe, so...
Alright, well, let's...
Just saying.
Marvel could make that.
Yeah, sure. Fucking, I would love the shit out of Namor the Submariner movie. That character is awesome. So.
Alright. Now, this Shazam movie, you talked about a little bit.
Yeah, Shazam.
This would be
Captain
weird
Marvel.
Just...
I'm just going to call him Captain Marvel. Okay. I can't call him Shazam. It was such a stupid fucking change.
It just makes me think of the movie with the bit... Was it... It's that movie about the basketball star who becomes a genie?
Oh, the Shaquille O'Neal...
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal. Is that called Shazam?
That might... I think if the movie's not called Shazam, I think his character is called Shazam.
Yeah.
That might... So, yeah, let's do some quick research on that. But, yeah.
Kazam is the Shaq movie.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Very similar.
How many people know Kazam? Is it just people our age?
Like, yeah, like who like vaguely remember seeing it like off of a VHS tape when they were a kid? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Shaq is cool. Kazam is not.
Hopefully they get Shaquille O'Neal to play Captain Marvel. But hopefully, no. Hopefully they get him to play Billy Batson, like the 10-year-old boy, and then get like someone else to actually play Captain Marvel, because I want to see Shaquille O'Neal try to play a 10-year-old white kid.
Okay. But this is weird. So we're gonna kick off the DC Connected Universe
with May. Like two of their biggest characters teaming up
and then
fighting Batman and Superman.
And then every other character they have thrown in there at the same time.
Exactly.
And then they're going to do a standalone Shazam movie.
Yeah, and then they just have, like, the dregs of their library of just like, well, we stuffed everyone into this Batman v Superman movie, and we'll just shit out a little tiny Shazam movie.
Sure. I mean, the thing is, there, it sounds like the rumor is that... Dwayne Johnson might be up for this, is some of the stuff I've heard. And he's a really good actor. He'd be right for that kind of part. He's, you know, a big dude. He could be a superhero. He's also very, very funny and charismatic and whatnot. That would go a long way towards making it interesting. But it's the kind of thing where, you know, if they get good people involved and it sounds like it's interesting on a creative level, maybe. But again, if they're...
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem like Warner is all that concerned about the creative level of these movies right now.
Yeah, it's like, don't get me wrong, I would love to see a Captain Marvel movie. I really like the Captain Marvel character. I think he could make a very different kind of superhero movie, but I don't like the idea. You know, I mean, they changed his name to Shazam. Like, Shazam is his catchphrase. That's not his name. So,
yeah,
fuck that.
Well, and to be fair, they are obviously not going to release a movie called Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
because...
sure, I guess that kind of makes sense, but...
Yeah.
But, like, if you could still call the movie Shazam and then have the character be named Captain Marvel, but they're not because they changed his name in the comic books to Shazam, so...
All right. Anyway, also in 2016, they have their Sandman movie coming out, and this is a very different thing. This is...
Yeah, this is Vertigo, like, it's not...
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they make a colossal, massive error in judgment and somehow, like, try to put Morpheus the Sandman into...
Justice League.
Yeah, which, I mean, to be fair, in the original graphic novel, like the first volume, Sandman does cross over with the DC Universe very slightly, but it's like, for the whole rest of the Sandman run, it's like, it's a totally separate thing, you know? Like, it's just, it's its own universe.
Right. Well, and again, I don't think they're doing that. I don't think this has anything to do with their other DC plans. Yeah. I mean, this is a movie they have given to Joseph Gordon-Levitt to star, produce, and direct in, and maybe even he's writing it. So,
yeah.
And if you've seen Joseph Gordon-Levitt's movie Don John, which he wrote and directed, I honestly think that was, on a writing level, one of the most structurally solid, thematically solid films of last year.
Hmm.
And it's well-directed, and he's great in it, so, and he's a really good actor, so that sounds like something where they're taking a slightly more auteurist approach to it,
yeah.
Where that's being made because of creative concerns more than maybe commercial ones.
Yeah.
So that could still be good. I have no idea what direction they're taking it in or anything.
Yeah, like, but I don't have, like, I love Sandman, but I don't have, like, any interest in seeing a Sandman movie. Like, I don't think there's any, like, I don't know, like, I don't know how you'd make it. It's just, I don't know what story you would use or anything, but it could be good, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But yeah, that's that stuff. But again, the big stuff comes with Justice League. That's May 2017. And this is where it gets weird, because they have Justice League in May 2017, and then they're doing two standalone movies with Wonder Woman and a crossover Flash
Green Lantern
movie later that summer and fall.
Which, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't know. Like, have Flash and Green Lantern, like, been technically confirmed for Justice League? And have we, like, heard any casting or anything?
No, it's weird. There's a Flash TV series coming out to the CW as a spinoff of their Arrow show, which is apparently really good.
Yeah.
But in any case, so I don't know if they're... I doubt they're using that Flash, but that's the only thing we've heard about with Flash. And Green Lantern, you know, the last thing we heard was the Ryan Reynolds movie that
fuck,
flopped.
I forgot they made that.
They're obviously not using Ryan Reynolds again, because Ryan Reynolds would probably shoot himself if he had to do that movie. And probably rightfully so, he should probably commit harakiri over it, but, you know.
That might be a little extreme. I don't know, that's just me, but sure.
I just think Ryan Reynolds should commit harakiri in general, because he's annoying, but yeah.
I like Ryan Reynolds, okay. Like, he just picks bad projects.
Name a good Ryan Reynolds movie.
Is that, what's that one that, like, everyone knows that he did, that comedy that's actually, it's pretty okay?
The one with Sandra Bullock?
No, like, from years, like, where he kind of came from. I can't remember the name of the movie.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, Van Wilder. That's an okay movie.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not bad.
All right.
I haven't seen it in forever, but...
Okay. I thought you were talking about The Proposal, the Sandra Bullock movie that...
No, I don't even know what that is.
Okay. That's his biggest hit to date.
Oh, sure, but, like, yeah.
So, anyway. We're getting off topic. But, yeah, so...
Wasn't he the dude in that movie where it's like the whole movie was he was like in a coffin buried underground?
Yes, and I probably would have.
I remember the trailer.
It's a good movie. I probably would have enjoyed it more if it wasn't Pretty Boy Ryan Reynolds in there. But
okay.
He was good in it. I just don't think he was great or anything.
Sure.
But yeah, in any case, let's see. So, okay. We got this Flash Green Lantern project that's rumored. And this is also where the rumors start breaking down for me, because obviously they want to be having Flash and Green Lantern in this universe, but. They're introducing most everyone in Batman v Superman. It sounds like they might be introduced in Justice League, although who knows? They could be coming in Batman v Superman, because we're getting new reports of superheroes that are in that every day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more stuffed than, you know, the Avengers was, and the Avengers was the fifth movie in a series.
Yeah.
So, sixth movie in a series. So yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. So their plan is we're going to see Wonder Woman twice in Batman v Superman, then Justice League, then she gets her own movie.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
We're going to have had a Green Lantern movie that may or may not be canonical. Then we're going to have him in Justice League. Then he's going to have a movie where he teams up with the Flash of all people. Is that a relationship in the comics? Are they best friends or something?
Kind of. Like, I remember, I'm not huge into Green Lantern. And, like, I'm not huge into that side of DC, like, at all. But I remember when I did pick up some, like, the early Justice League New 52 stuff, they did have, like, Green Lantern and Flash had a bit of a thing.
Okay.
The real question is, if they are doing Green Lantern and Flash, what Green Lantern and Flash are they doing? Which isn't a question, because I know which ones they're going to do. They're going to do the shitty, really boring ones, Hal Jordan and Barry Allen, instead of picking, like, the interesting characters that, like, kind of followed in their wake, like the Green Lanterns, Jon Stewart, or Kyle Rayner, or, you know, fucking Wally West, which is the Flash that everybody likes, but for some reason, every time DC redoes this shit, they keep on doing Barry Allen and Hal Jordan, who are the blandest fucking characters on the planet. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's just they're planning on introducing a whole lot of superheroes without any origin stories. And while origin stories are not the most exciting, or, you know, who knows? Maybe Batman v Superman, the first 30 minutes is we get 10 minutes of Batman origin, we get 10 minutes of Wonder Woman origin, we get 10 minutes of Aquaman
origin. It's just like an anthology of origin stories.
Yeah.
Like, Superman's not even in the movie because we already got his origin last time.
Who knows? It's weird. Is the Wonder Woman movie going to be a prequel or something? I don't...
Yeah.
It's weird. And yeah, also,
that's a good point, because it's like, because these aren't heroes that people know the origins to, and to be fair, like, Flash, it doesn't really have much of an origin. Like, he was working with chemicals and they got struck by lightning and all of a sudden he can run fast. Like, that's as far as his origin goes. But Green Lantern has a kind of involved origin. Wonder Woman has a very involved origin. They're not ones that people generally know.
Well, and even the Flash with a simple origin story, I don't know if you can just drop the Flash into a movie and be like, fast dude. It's got a costume. It's a little, I don't know, it seems
like I think Flash of all of them is the one you can most do it for, but you're right, like, it's still not something you can just kind of do.
Yeah,
it's not like you could, like, you know, them introducing a new Batman, Batman v Superman is totally fucking fine, don't have any problem with it, but, like, just throwing Wonder Woman out there, I think most of the general audiences are going to be confused.
Yeah, and here's where things really start, really stop making sense, is that we'll talk about it in a minute, but they're also planning Man of Steel 2 for the following May. Talk about that in a second. But that would mean that Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, would have to be in 3 major blockbusters in 3 consecutive Mays.
Yeah. And without possibly, like, cameos in the other movies, too.
Yeah. But even weirder is that, like, okay, Gal Gadot is playing Wonder Woman. Now, she's in Superman v. Batman, she's in Justice League, and she's in Wonder Woman, and Justice League and Wonder Woman are coming out 2 months apart. That's not possible. I'm sorry. You can't, unless you have her, like, the first half of every day she's on Justice League, and the second half she goes over to another soundstage and is shooting Wonder Woman, which means both movies would probably be really bad. Mm-hmm. It's like, that doesn't make sense. But also, assuming, like, Flash and Green Lantern are in Justice League, how do they shoot a movie that's out for that Christmas? None of it makes sense logistically.
The Flash and Green Lantern movie is just their scenes together in Justice League, just cut out and just pasted together. I think that's probably what it will be.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
But let's make fun of the idea of doing Man of Steel 2 in 2018.
Yeah, which is just, again, like, none of this stuff is confirmed, and if it was, like, they were making an actual Superman sequel, I would say that they wouldn't call it Man of Steel 2, but they're calling the movie Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, so they clearly have no idea how to title the movie. So they might just say, fuck it, we're going to call it Man of Steel 2, which would be, you know, maybe draw a little bit too much attention to the fact that they just sapped their own Superman sequel into being this, like, franchise pony, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I just love the idea of them being, like, them making this Superman, this very controversial, let's say, Superman movie, and then using that as this jumping point of just, like, building an entire franchise off of just having that one fucking movie, and then, like, 3 years later, let's give him another movie, you know? Like, let's not just, like, you know, focus on making some good Superman movies. No, fuck it. We're just going to force, like, all this franchise shit. And just probably ruin everything.
I just don't know how good creative stuff can come out of this kind of schedule because, you know, as is noted in a lot of these articles, if you want Zack Snyder to be doing Man of Steel 2 also, which would make sense, that means you have to have him doing the Batman movie, Batman v Superman, the Justice League movie, the Man of Steel 2 movie, all in 3 consecutive Mays, which is just, that's not possible. I don't even know how that doing Justice League 1 year after the Batman movie is possible. Maybe because they're shooting Batman v Superman right now and it's going to be sitting on a shelf for a while.
Sure, yeah.
They can get a head start with Justice League, but then maybe you could get a head start with Man of Steel 2, but, you know, someone's got to be writing the scripts also.
Yeah.
And planning this all out, and, you know, yeah, I do not believe this report. I wouldn't be surprised if there are elements of truth to it, but I don't think you can get Justice League and Wonder Woman out 2 months apart. You know, there isn't... Mm-hmm. Robert Downey Jr. does not star in The Avengers and then Iron Man 3 next month. He stars in The Avengers and then Iron Man 3 next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, even with... They're planning on... So next year is going to be Avengers 2, and then the year after that is Captain America 3. That's hard enough on Chris Evans doing 3 of those, but... Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. But that's also established. They've gotten into the rhythm of things. Marvel mm-hmm. knows how to make these movies. They've got it all lined up. They've got filmmakers lined up. As far as we know, nobody is lined up for any of this other than Zack Snyder. He obviously can't direct all of them.
Yeah.
Unless they clone him.
Which, you know, that would be very DC of them. So.
Sure.
They might.
It's weird.
Yeah. All the DC movie stuff is just... It hurts my brain.
I feel like... you know, and some people were asking, like, what will this force Marvel to do? Nothing. They're in a perfect position. They're doing great. Every movie they've had is a hit. Everyone likes their movies, and they're doing fine. Marvel doesn't need to change anything. They just need to sit back and laugh at this, because it's going to be a train wreck. It's going to be a giant
I think
it'd
pile be really up. Fucking funny if Marvel pushed out a Captain Marvel movie before their Shazam movie could come out. That's like, they block their Captain Marvel with their Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel block.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Well, anything more to say about this other than stupid?
Stupid.
Okay, so Sean, let's talk a little bit more about E3.
Yes. All these. The threes.
Yeah. First thing, this was the biggest thing we didn't get to talk about last week, because it really didn't come out until after we'd recorded the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But Ubisoft got themselves into a kerfuffle.
Yeah. As they tend to.
Yeah. So, and I like to use the word kerfuffle for this, just as I did for the Tomodachi Life thing with Nintendo, because...
Right, yeah.
Everybody is just kind of treating it sillily.
That's
sillily.
Not a word.
In a silly way.
There you go. That's
okay.
Better. Yeah.
So I think kerfuffle is a fitting word.
Yeah, it's just everyone's being stupid about stupid stuff.
Yeah. So here we go. Ubisoft, they got Assassin's Creed Unity and Far Cry 4 coming out. They both have multiplayer modes of a sort. Assassin's Creed Unity has no competitive multiplayer, but it has some drop-in, drop-out, four-player co-op.
Yeah.
Yes, and it kind of works like Watch Dogs, but with a co-op angle. And then Far Cry 4 will have, it sounds like, some competitive multiplayer stuff, but they haven't fully detailed everything.
Yeah,
but either way,
that like co-op thing that they showed in the Sony presser,
right?
Press conference.
So people were wondering, with these games, will you be able to play as women, female characters with these? And why this kerfuffle started, just as it did with the Tomodachi Life thing, I think, really, is Ubisoft gave a dumb answer to both of them.
Just the dumbest fucking thing you could possibly say in response to this question, other than, we here at Ubisoft have a policy where we discriminate against women because we hate women. Like, that's the only thing they could have said that was worse. But
yeah.
Say what they said.
Basically what they said was that they really wanted to include women. They were this... They even said the thing where, like, we were this close.
Yeah.
We were an
like,
inch
you see
away.
How close my fingers are? They're almost touching. That's how close we were.
We were that close to including women in these games, but we realized at the last minute that we just didn't have the time, manpower, or money to, you know, code female assets for these games, which is complete and utter bullshit for a couple of reasons. The number one being, they are fucking Ubisoft. Whatever they want to put in these games, they can. They have that. They can make time because they have money. So that's part of it, is that that's just, that obviously is not true. And the biggest thing was that they said that for Assassin's Creed Unity. They then the next day clarified their stance on Unity, which made more sense. We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Then the next day they gave the same excuse as the first one, but for Far Cry 4.
Yeah.
And it's like one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's a false excuse. Like, maybe there's a seed of truth if you kind of took it and rewrote it.
Yeah, that it's like, I mean, because to be fair, it's not like, depending on what they're doing, like, if they're implying that it's like, you know, making a female character for Assassin's Creed Unity would be, like, replacing the main character who has already been designed to be male with a female character and have to do all the motion capture, all the voice acting, like, rewrite the script for, like, gender-neutral pronouns and that kind of stuff, and redo, like, all of that. Like, that's not a problem that just, like, money can necessarily solve.
I know, but that's not what they said.
Exactly. Yeah, I know that, like, their actual answer was stupid, but it's like you said, there is a kernel of, like, it's not just because they're Ubisoft doesn't mean it's, like, they can do anything and it's fine, like, because they can just throw money at it, because it's, like, these are things that take time and man hours, you know, like, it's not a money issue.
But here's what it is. It's, like, with... Yeah. Why I say, you know, if what they said is not a time money issue, because it's like, for instance, Call of Duty Ghosts was the first Call of Duty game that allowed you to play as female soldiers in multiplayer, and their excuse for that was, well, we just didn't have the time or assets or manpower until now to put female characters in Call of Duty multiplayer. Bullshit, it was sexism that made you do that.
Sexism, and I mean, it's not just sexism, but it's also like they made, you know, deliberate design choice to limit the degree of customization that you could give your playable avatars in multiplayer in Call of Duty, because all you could do was change their weapons and their loadouts and couldn't change their appearance at all. As soon as you allow, like, any degree of appearance changing, obviously it demands you to be able to select your character's gender.
Sure. But it's like, it's just one of those things where it's...
Yeah,
if it's just that you have, you know, customizable characters and you're, you know, leaving out women for some reason, that's weird. But that's not what Assassin's Creed Unity is or was or was ever planned to be.
Sure.
It's not a competitive multiplayer game, and it's not a game where you choose how your character looks. You are the main character of the game, Arno, in all cases, even if you team up with other people to do co-op. It looks like you can customize Arno's appearance a little bit, but again,
it's I think they've said that there's a higher degree of character customization in Assassin's Creed Unity than there has been in other games.
Yeah. So you can do that kind of thing, but yeah, if he's a male character and the story was written around that, that's fine. We can talk about this later. The problem is more with the industry and the series as a whole that there are no women playable characters, but we'll get into that later. So yes, they explained that poorly. The next day they explained it better, which is that what I just said. You're Arno. Arno's a male character, so we can't do that. That makes more sense.
Yeah, then that, like, just to clarify, like, the way the co-op, and this is just what they've described, this is like, because all of this is so fucking confusing, because everybody's kind of giving different answers, so you have to sort of, like, try to parse out what's actually going on. And what seems to be the real reason why there aren't female playable characters is because at some point they decided that it's like, okay, the way the co-op is going to work, it sounds like they're basing it off of like the Watch Dogs engine, probably, is that it's the same thing that the Watch Dogs multiplayer does, that when you're engaging with co-op, you are always Arno in this case. You are always the main character, and everyone else appears to be different co-op characters, but for them, they see themselves as Arno. It's like there's this one, I think, American Army game where no matter what team you play on, you are always the American team, and the enemy team is always the terrorists. Or like in Hearthstone, every time you play Hearthstone, it's like the board is on your side, no matter what. Nobody is seeing the other side of the board, you know? It's that right. kind of thing. It's your perspective. So, obviously, if that's the case, you know, like, it doesn't matter what, if like the other co-op characters are female assassins, because you never play as them. So, like, so you'd never get to make the choice to be a female character, and so, like, the issue of, like, you wanting to be able to pick a female character for yourself is not one that, like, I mean, you can still raise that issue, but it's a totally different issue of, like, you just don't get to select who you are at all. You are the main character, which is the way all the Assassin's Creed games, single player, has worked.
Yes. So, just a weird response, and Far Cry 4 also, I don't really think they've clarified the Far Cry 4 stuff, in part because I don't think they're really ready to show off what the multiplayer is,
yeah.
in which case they probably should have just said no comment on that for now.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
this,
that's just what they.
I mean, this ultimately got so contentious. I mean, there was a report on, I think I saw this on Kotaku, where the author was saying that he tried to ask the game's director of Unity about the controversy, and it was, he said that he showed the question he asked, and it wasn't a contentious question. It was just basically, you know, a comment on this kind of thing. And the guy was, the PR rep stopped him from giving an answer on that at all, and that's where Ubisoft people were at a certain point at E3, was they were not allowed to speak on this. So it got very contentious.
Yeah.
Thoughts. I know you have thoughts on this, Sean. So.
Sure. Well, it's something that's like, it's something that the gaming press, it's not, this is like, and okay, this is another issue that I have with it, is that like, I think we like, people who are like, sort of interested in the gaming industry and talk in the gaming industry and talk about the gaming industry, need to kind of, in some instances, get our heads out of our asses and realize that this is not insular anymore. Gaming is not a small thing. It is not isolated in any way. Is reflective and a part of our larger culture and society. So it's like, I think we have a tendency to sort of focus so much on ourselves that we lose perspective of, like, you know, this is not an issue with the video game industry. This is an issue with American culture, and honestly an issue with humanity as a species throughout our entire history as a species. Is how to deal with the differences between men and women and sort of like come to some sort of understanding in society that's like, there are differences biologically between men and women, but those differences are incredibly minor compared to the differences between individuals based on their personality and that kind of shit. So you shouldn't really treat people that particularly differently based on their gender, because it's usually not relevant in the slightest. It's an issue that we have always struggled with, but like, the video game press is so insular and focused on, like, this is a video game problem, it's a problem with video games, that there's not enough representation for women in video games, and not necessarily, you know, this, like, there's not enough female main characters in, like, movies, like, at all. There's not enough women in, like, sort of high-level creative positions in almost, like, any creative industry at all that I can think of. Not in movies, not in video games, not in comic books. Not in TV shows. So it's like, it's a cultural problem.
More in TV these days. TV is probably having the best time of it right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we're talking degrees at a certain point. It's like, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you can, you know, you can think of some of the better female, or shows with female main characters on TV. Like, you know, right now Fargo is on, and its protagonist is a woman, and she's a great character, and that's great, but, you know, completely male-created show.
Yeah.
There are no... there are really very few female directors in TV. There's Michelle McLaren, and she's probably the best director working in TV today, but she's kind of on her own right now.
Yeah.
So, and in movies, there are very few female directors. They never get blockbuster jobs.
Yeah.
And in games, it's the exact same kind of thing. You have, for every Amy Hennig you have 500 male writers.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. And but so one of the things that the gaming press does is that it's very insular, it's very opinionated, it's very extreme. And so you have these handful of really hot-button American social issues, particularly like for video games, female representation, and then we saw with Tomodachi Life, like the gay marriage question. And that, like, it's such a hot-button issue that whenever it comes up, the gaming press goes extreme and over the top and loses, from my perspective, any sense of, like, rationality and sort of, like, insight into anything. And so it becomes like, oh, you can't play as women in this game. Like, we're going to write 1,000 critical pieces about it without, in any of those critical pieces, talking about what the co-op is, in what way the co-op is implemented, in what way we think, like, a female character could or should be implemented, and show this, like, what is the game? Like, what are you talking about? You can't just write 1,000 articles about Assassin's Creed Unity without talking about anything that is in Assassin's Creed Unity and only talking about what isn't in Assassin's Creed Unity. So it's like, if you don't understand the context of the game and what the game is doing, if you don't say, because it's like most of these articles, because I read, like, all this stuff, if you don't say, oh, the way the co-op works is that from your perspective, you are always the main assassin dude, well, that's a huge fucking factor. Like, that's how the co-op is structured. You can't just ignore that fact. It's like in Tomodachi Life, that instance, everyone writing about the game were people who had not played the game, people who knew nothing about the game, and were talking about it like it was a Sims game when you don't have direct control over the characters in Tomodachi Life at all. Which, again, is not an excuse for why there's no gay marriage in the game, but it gives you some context for why there isn't. It's not just, oh, it's not in there. It's that, like, the way the structure of this game is structured, it would be incredibly complex, and we are too far along to change that about the way the game is designed. The way the game is designed, you'd have to make a lot of concessions to implement this other thing. So, again, it's not always an excuse, but it's an important detail that is left out because you want it to be... It's, you know, it's clickbait articles, and that really frustrates me because they are really important issues, and I think cheapening it by having these really irrational, reactionary critical pieces, it's kind of disgusting to me. And it's like, you should try to approach it rationally and reasonably always, because that's the way I think you can convince people. If you just make these really reactionary clickbait articles, you're just going to make me really mad, because it's like, I can see the flaw in your argumentation, and that pisses me off. It's like, and I want to be on your side because you are on the right side. You're just going about it the wrong way, and it frustrates me.
It's just one of the problems I think everyone who writes about media in any way has, which is that it's tough. I think people wanting inclusion is great and noble,
yeah.
And that's not a bad... Obviously, that's
yeah.
only a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think people look at it in a weird way, because if... And this is just my view on it, is that if you try to attack things on a case-by-case basis, like just... I'm going to get hugely mad that Assassin's Creed Unity
yeah.
does not have female main characters, then you're not actually attacking the root of the problem.
Yeah,
because the root of the problem is not this one video game.
Yeah, it's the structural system that
yes.
creates these video games and promotes them and makes them successful at the expense of making and creating games that have female protagonists.
Yes, exactly. It's yeah, the problem maybe is that the Assassin's Creed series has never had a mainline console game that has a female main character.
Yeah, even though they're the premise for like the way those games are made actually makes it a really good franchise to introduce a strong female protagonist.
Yeah, you could do that so easily. And there have been some interesting female characters in the game.
Yeah.
But I really...
And a lot of people have made the really like accurate and insightful comment that this game being set in the French Revolution makes it really ironic that it's like doesn't have a main female character because... Like, in particular, of a lot of historical events, the French Revolution has a lot of really important female figures that would make it really appropriate to have a female main character in that setting.
Yeah, so maybe that's the issue, not the, you know, you can't choose to play as a woman in it. There's just different things. Different games operate differently. You know, you can't... Mass Effect, for instance, they wrote the story in such a way there where... Gender is not what's important, it's the choices you make and the
yeah.
person you are, and so everyone can kind of see themselves in the game that way, and that's
yeah.
great, but not every game can be that.
Exactly, like, you can't make The Last of Us and have Joel and Ellie be, like, you know, these mutable characters that it's like, Joel could have been a woman and Ellie could have been a boy.
And that's
like,
a game where...
That would totally change everything about the way the narrative is structured.
Well, especially because those characters, their gender does matter.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. In most stories, characters' genders do. Like, you have to... I think you have to be very conscious if you're crafting a story to make it so that, like, that's not important. You know?
Right.
Or, like, for Mass Effect, you know, they... Like, that's the whole selling point of Mass Effect, is the entire game is designed around the fact that it's like... You can be whoever you want to be. So it's like you can be whatever gender, you can be whatever sexual orientation, but that's like a huge quantity of effort and like the main selling point of Mass Effect. It's basically designed around that fact.
Yeah, and anytime you're telling a story with any specificity, and most great stories do have specificity, yeah. Well, gender is a thing there. The problem is not individual games that go for male over female, it's that the industry goes for male over female. What would be nice is if we had, you know, every other Assassin's Creed just swap gender or something.
Sure.
Or the industry as a whole, you know, is if half of the blockbusters that came out each year you were able to play, if it was a female-oriented story, that's not the issue. And I do think it's reductive to go after individual stories when there's not necessarily anything wrong with Assassin's Creed Unity having a male lead and doing that.
Yeah.
What's wrong is the overall trend that it plays into.
Yeah. Which, again, if, like, to go back to my point about the video game industry being too insular, is that that's a problem that then... goes back to, well, right. We're not, you know, there's not enough women in, like, the high creative positions, and there's not a lot of women in video games at all. It's like, why is that? Well, you know, that goes back to, in our society, we promote men into going into, like, science and engineering and math positions, which is the main field that then extends into video games. And it's like, well, then if you back out, like, how do you fix that? Well, it's like, maybe we need to, you know, there's a massive disparity in between, like, the number of congressmen versus congresswomen that are elected. So it's like, well, then you need to fix that. And it's like, it's this massive structural problem that is so far above and beyond video games that it's like writing this argument about Assassin's Creed Unity sometimes is just like, you're so far away from, like, the core of the issue that I don't even know what you're arguing about anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's... I mean, you know, and you could make every argument we just said about movies, too, and about TV shows and everything. You know,
yeah,
you
especially can, comic books. Comic books has it probably worse than anything.
Well, of course. I mean, it would be, and here's the thing. So it would be weird to go to an Iron Man movie and be like, I am mad that Tony Stark is a man.
Exactly, yeah.
But it would be totally reasonable to say, why is every superhero movie male-driven?
Yeah, that you're sitting there, and after all the trailers have played, it's like, why is there no trailer for a movie that has a main female character, or why is the only one a shitty-looking romantic comedy?
Yeah. I mean, that, to me, movies, I think, probably are the worst offender of this, because the only... I mean, this is getting better with movies, and certainly on the indie scene it's better, but let's restrict it to main Hollywood releases.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they give women to do is bad romantic comedies where women have to kind of look like idiots.
Yeah.
And it's terrible, because everyone in a romantic comedy looks like idiots, especially the lead. And
yeah.
It's... And that's just, it's so insulting on that level that there are female-driven movies, but for the most part, they're really insulting to everyone, just to humanity. So it's really tough, and it's more complex than just Assassin's Creed Unity doesn't have women. They are the root of all evil.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck Ubisoft. But seriously, though, fuck Ubisoft.
Yeah, if you want to say fuck Ubisoft, you can say it for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, no,
but,
seriously.
You know, maybe that's not... And, you know, maybe you could say fuck Ubisoft because they never have female-led stories.
Yeah.
If you want to say that, that's okay. But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. So let's
Even though they did just make that Child of Light game, which does have a female main character.
Sure. Did they make it or did they just publish it?
No, they made it.
They made it?
It's their whole engine and everything.
Yeah. But it's also not their big, you know, AAA release.
Yeah,
for
sure.
The year.
But, you know, hey, it's, you know, Activision isn't doing that.
Sure. All right. So let's go ahead and go on. I want to talk a little bit about... There were details that finally came out at E3 for Xbox One's Kinect-free developer options.
Yeah.
So last time we talked about this, that, you know, Xbox One was kicking the Kinect out the door, and you can now buy it without the Kinect. They also said, well, maybe this will open more doors for developers, and I know you in particular are a little confused about that.
Like, yeah, about, like, what that meant.
Yeah. I think the system, so this is an article I have from Kotaku talking about this, and they did some interviews with people at Microsoft. And talking about this, and I just think it's interesting. So, developers will be able to forego Kinect sensor support for their games to access 10% of the console's GPU processing power that was previously reserved for functionality with Kinect. So, Microsoft or Xbox chief Phil Spencer gave a little more detail into this. So the idea is that a developer can choose a Kinect-free option, and that game is then flagged as a non-gesture game.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the game will not be able to support gestures, but also system gestures will be disabled when you're playing it, including visual recognition and that kind of thing. I think voice commands will still work while you're doing that. But I just think this is interesting because that's good on one level because, for instance, Bungie says it will now be able to get Destiny to 1080p 30fps on Xbox One by disabling Kinect, which they would not have been able to do previously. And so we will probably see more games getting up to graphical parity because of that. But it's further, like, just splintering the console in a weird way.
Yeah, like, although, like, one of the big things, I think, is it's, a, like, a huge boon for them is that what all they're disabling is the gesture stuff, because that's the stuff that nobody fucking uses, because that's the stuff that, like, always doesn't work. You know, the voice commands sometimes don't work. Gesture controls, from what I understand, like, I've seen a lot of videos of people playing Kinect Sports Rivals. I've not seen a lot of videos of people play Kinect Sports Rivals well and have the controls seem very responsive, so...
Exactly.
Yeah, so having the voice still be there and still work, like, that's great. Like, that's really cool, because that's the thing that seems like the developers would actually use as, like, a small, oh, you can, you know, instead of this being, a, like, some command assigned to the D-pad, you can just say, follow me, and then your guys will follow you. Like, I can see that, and that being okay, but waving at the game while you're still playing, like, a traditional video game seems like something that no developer would probably want to really implement, so...
Yeah,
so you kind of get to have your GPU power and eat it, too, is what I'm saying.
You do, and I think it's interesting. It's just, it further cements that the Kinect for Xbox One was only ever about voice commands.
Makes you question the why the fuck they had the gesture thing in there at all. Because at some point, the only thing you ever hear people talk about using their Kinect is they use the voice to control the main OS.
And why do you need this giant external camera unit for fucking voice commands?
Yeah.
It's baffling. You could have put that in the console, you could put it in the controller, you could put it in a headset. I mean, there's so many things you could
do. Use your fucking phone if you want to.
Sure. It's just, and this is just solidifying that even more, because I can't imagine many developers are going to opt out of this. I mean, they're probably going to do this. Because I think a lot of developers probably want to stop seeing those headlines written of, this game does not run at 1080p on Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is kind of pathetic that we've got our next-gen consoles, and there's one of them that still does not run at the resolution we have had for 10 years of HD television. It's pathetic. So it's weird on that level. But yeah, so that's good. That's better for Xbox One owners, I suppose, and you're not using your gesture commands anyway, so you're not going to miss anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you just buy your Xbox One without a Kinect, that's all the easier at that point.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about it at all.
But it also, I mean, it just continues to signal the death knell for the Kinect, because if all it is voice commands now, and I assume most games will just do that, then, you know, it has no purpose. So.
Yeah, it's weird. That's like, you know, I just think back to when that console was revealed, and it was like, that was everything in the reveal, was like, look at all, like, how our console is designed around. I mean, that's why it's called the Xbox One. It's supposed to be the one thing you need in your living room, other than your cable box and your TV, because your cable box plugs into your fucking Xbox. But it's the one thing you need in your living room. It's the Xbox One. That's why they gave it that shitty fucking name, like How to Train Your Dragon 2. And now it's useless. It's just like you're destroying your multimedia thing to try to, like, get all the power you can out of it, and you're dropping, like, you're slowly dropping, like, the unique thing about your console in order to try to fight Sony, which, like, you know, it's probably going to work for them, but for me it doesn't make any sense, because it's like, I have a PS4, so it's like, there's no reason to get an Xbox One other than the exclusives, and the exclusives, it doesn't matter to me whether or not you use the Kinect if I'm just going to get it for the exclusives, you know?
Exactly. Alright. So, Nintendo at E3.
Nintendo! Woohoo!
We talked about most of the Nintendo at E3 stuff last time, but there were a couple of pieces of news we didn't get to talk about last week because Nintendo had just gone up to bat.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about these. One thing I thought was interesting is that somebody asked Ubisoft if they were still, you know, invested in Nintendo's Wii U platform.
Ubisoft just said, we're not answering questions from anybody anymore. We're just going to go hide in our hole, please.
No, but you may remember Ubisoft, when the Wii U launched, was Nintendo's best friend.
Yeah, exactly. But then, because they had, Zombie U was like one of the only original third-party exclusive on that game. And then also Rayman Legends was originally going to be a Wii U exclusive until they were like, nobody bought this thing, so we're just going to delay this game for 9 months and then release it on everything else.
Yes. So someone asked Ubisoft about this, and they said that we actually like the Wii U a lot. We have finished games that we have made for the Wii U. They are ready to ship, but we are not releasing them because at this point the Wii U has sold so poorly, it would be a loss to market this game at any level. That is amazing.
That's just like a kick in the nuts, you know? It's just like, oh yeah, no, we have games done. Like, they've been done for a while now, but, like, we literally, it would be stupid for us to release these games now. We need to wait for more people to buy the Wii U, or else we will waste all of our money on marketing the fucking thing.
Right.
Like, that's just extraordinary. I've never heard anyone say that before.
And yet, it's a perfectly reasonable argument.
Yeah, it makes sense to me from a business perspective. It's like, yeah, like, because, you know, when you release the game, obviously, is when you sell most of your copies. So, you probably do want to wait for either more people to buy the Wii U's or, you know, maybe just scrap the fucking games because you spend more money on marketing than you would on selling the things.
Yeah, I mean, if your cap is, you know, if every Wii U owner bought your game and that would give you 2.5 million sales, that would be good, but, you know, it's not going to...
Yeah, but depending on the budget of the game, that right. could be disastrous. You know, like, yeah. Tomb Raider barely squeaked through profitability by selling, I think, like, fucking, like, 6 million copies or something. Like, it did really well.
Right.
But, like, barely met Square Enix's, like, expectations for the game.
Yeah. So, I think that's funny. Even weirder on some level to me is that Nintendo was asked about Twitch streaming integration, because that's a big deal on PS4 and Xbox One now.
Mm-hmm.
And basically Nintendo's response, I think they asked Reggie, I might be wrong on that.
Yeah.
I think this was Reggie, though. He said that they will not, and that Nintendo will never put Twitch streaming on the Wii U, not because of any technical reason, but because they don't think it's fun. And they're not going to put things out that don't seem fun, and they just don't think streaming games is fun.
Yeah, sure, like, you know, they said that from 1982, but...
Sure. It's weird. I mean, neither you nor I enjoy just watching Raw game streams.
Yeah, not really. That's not my thing, but...
But it's a lot of people's thing.
Yeah, like, that's, it's huge. Like, esports is this huge growing thing with stuff like Dota 2 and League of Legends. And so I think it was... You know, or it's just, like, cool shit, like, Twitch plays Pokemon. Like
yeah.
That's a big growing market in the video game community, and it seems really sort of backwards to me that you just be like, nah, it's a fad. It's kind of like what it sounds like they're saying. Almost like, you know, kind of like it feels like how Nintendo's attitude towards like multiplayer, online multiplayer, and online marketplaces have always been is like, eh.
Yeah, who cares?
That stuff's shit anyways. We're not going to get involved with it. Meanwhile, you know, Microsoft and Sony are like raking in millions with DLC and these great online multiplayer like suites and stuff. And Nintendo's sitting there and it's like, we've got friend codes. We've devised the most inconvenient system to use the internet possible.
Yes, and I
jump through our hoops, please.
It's not just that Twitch streaming and stuff is big now, but that Microsoft and Sony are both committed to making it bigger in the future. So, for instance, one of the big things Sony showed off at E3, and I've talked about this before, but they'll be implementing it soon, is the idea that you can watch a friend stream and then take over for them and play it.
Yeah.
That's the kind
of
thing that I
or
think...
Or that, like, if a lot of people are watching your stream, that there can be something designed in the game that, like, you can, like, the people watching the stream can vote on stuff that could be like, oh... Like, what weapon should spawn at the next safe house? Hypothetically, like Left 4 Dead or something, like hypothetically, or oh, like how many, like what special effect do you think should spawn here? Like cool little stuff that's like community features that might be something if they implemented that and a community grew around people like video game personalities. That might be something I would engage with and watch those streams if you could like contribute in some way.
Sure, I think that would be fun, and I think no matter what, it would get a lot more people who were previously interested in at least trying it.
Yeah.
So there's ways to make it interesting and whatnot. Nintendo isn't even going to try. The real answer probably is that the Wii U is not powerful enough to do this.
Yeah.
That would probably take more RAM than they have, that kind of thing, and their internet infrastructure is still shit.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people were praising Mario Kart 8 multiplayer. I should note, I have gotten that to work once. I've been able to get into a multiplayer lobby in Mario Kart 8 exactly one time. And it worked well, but if you can't get into it, it doesn't fucking matter.
And that was like, and you specify that it's like you don't have that problem with normal multiplayer games, right?
No, of course not. I have good internet. It's all my Wii U is the only console that is not plugged in via Ethernet because it does not have an Ethernet port.
It's on Wi-Fi, like, that shouldn't be that
problem.
No, cause that problem. It would just increase the latency a little bit.
No, and it's just, and I mean, this is on launch day. I was not surprised at that. But 3 weeks into Mario Kart 8's lifespan, I should be able to get into a goddamn multiplayer lobby. If you guys can't... I mean, I was never, in the entire lifespan of Super Smash Bros. Brawl, able to get into a multiplayer lobby.
I think it never worked. I think I did it once, and then I was like, why am I playing Super Smash Bros. Online? This is, like, the saddest thing I've ever done in my life.
Of course. I mean, yeah. Ignoring that, you should it should work, though, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you're gonna fucking put a multiplayer mode in... Yeah, if you're going to put anything into your game, it probably should work.
And here's the most ironic thing is I think Nintendo has maybe... It definitely has more first-party titles than anyone else that I think people would enjoy watching streams of.
Yeah, like they did a huge thing where it's like they had a whole like Smash Brothers tournament at E3 that people seemed like really into and shit. It's like,
yeah,
Smash Brothers is a great game to show off like on a Twitch stream, you know? Because it's a really engageable... it's a really engageable... interesting, visually interesting and compelling fighting game that anyone can sort of like watch and get, whereas most fighting games, you know, there's all this like complexity that you can't understand unless you're really into the game.
I think it would be fun to get four friends together, play some Smash Bros, and just stream it while you're playing.
Sure.
For other people to watch. I think people would do that. And Mario Kart 8, there's that.
Show the world how fucking cheap your fucking friends are. It's so Smash Brothers, like one motherfucker's just sitting in the corner hiding, the Solid Snake just shooting rockets the whole time, or you're on that map where there are the clouds, and some motherfucker's playing Kirby and he's like on the farthest cloud and he keeps on jumping so the cloud doesn't disappear, and you're playing like Ganondorf so it's really hard to get over there because your jump sucks. Fuck those people. Show the world how awful and just terrible people your fucking friends are. That's right.
And I think Twitch would be a key weapon in their arsenal to get the Wii U up in sales because... You know, they're going to have... Smash Bros. Is their big game this year. Yeah. I think it could be bigger if, when it comes out, you could watch someone play it online and then be like, you know what? I want to buy a Wii U for this.
Yeah.
That's how that works. Exactly. That's why Sony and Microsoft do it. It is not altruism. Mm-hmm. They don't do it because they think everyone's going to love this. They do it because they think this could sell us more stuff. You know? That's how the world works, Nintendo. Whatever.
Yeah, it's a weird...
Here's a weird thing.
Okay.
I am seeing a bunch of think pieces explaining how Nintendo won E3 this year.
Yeah,
They showed a lot of... I said this last time. They showed a lot of games I think look fun and creative and interesting. They did not show games that are going to sell the Wii U.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Splatoon is not going to be their infamous second son.
Yeah. To be fair, at least of all the stuff I saw, because I have since seen the Nintendo... digital event, because it was not called the Nintendo Direct. But I watched that. Splatoon was, to me, the most interesting thing they showed. It was hey, this is something different. Like, I actually watched it, and it's like they spent time explaining the mechanics, and I was like, I'm not sure if, like, you know, the online stuff aspect of the game would make me kind of nervous, because I've never had an experience where online has ever worked on any Nintendo thing ever. But it's like... it's a different kind of game. It's I've never seen a third-person shooter done like that. It's got a really interesting, unique concept. It's something... it's a different... you know, like, this not, you know, Mario Splatoon. It's all different characters and different character designs in a different universe, a different setting. It's like, it's something new that Nintendo is making. It's just like, it's a small thing, but it's better to me than, like, seeing the fifth fucking Kirby or Yoshi game that's coming out.
I agree, but here's my question.
Yeah.
Do you have that opinion because of lowered expectations about Nintendo or because of that game on its own?
A little bit of both. Like, I think legitimately what they showed, like, if you watch the Nintendo Digital event, like, it was a good showing for that game. But yes, a lot of it is, like, me expecting so little from Nintendo at this point in terms of, like, you know, they could show anything new and I would be like, well, hey, it's not another XYZ franchise, you know, that you just keep on churning out over and over and over again. They're at the point where it's like they have like multiple franchises of like the same franchises now, where it's like they did the Kirby Epic Yarn game and now they're doing the Yoshi version of it. So it's like they're doing another Yoshi's Island game, but they're also doing another Yarn game at the same time. Like, how are you stacking your own franchises on top of each other? It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's just... again, I said it last week. I thought Nintendo had a good showing. I wouldn't call it a bad showing. I thought it was a good showing for Nintendo. But I do think lowered expectations play into it. And I think, look, Splatoon looks good. I will play Splatoon. I have a Wii U. I have no excuse not to. That looks like a fun game. I'll play it. But it's, you know, I just think if you compare it, there's so much more meat at what Sony and Microsoft were showing to me.
Sure, yeah.
Because they have viable platforms.
Mm-hmm.
You know? At the end of the day, that's what it is. And I also think, you know, Splatoon we got a fucking gameplay demo of, but their big moment was like Zelda and stuff like that, and that was nothing. There's nothing... you can't make any opinion based on that Zelda video.
Yeah.
Or really a lot of what they showed. So As I said last time, my conclusion from the Nintendo show was it was a good show for people who already own a Wii U, but I really don't think there's anything there that's going to make people rush out and buy Wii Us. Whereas I think either Microsoft or Sony, you look at those, I think they showed enough stuff that convinced you that this would be a console worth owning for the content that will be on it.
Sure.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know how people judge how people win E3. Is it just that the person who didn't do as shitty as they did last time the most? You know, it's like, it's a weird thing.
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's move on.
Okay.
Any other, like, final E3 thoughts? Let's bury this for the rest of the year.
Not really. Like I said, like, I've tense watched the Nintendo thing. It's like, I thought that was fine. Like, I do like the format that Nintendo had for it. Like, I still like the press conferences more because I think the press conference has, like, this sort of concrete physical presence to it that I appreciate. That it's, like, not something you ever get anywhere in video games. It's like, I don't want everything to be digital video stuff constantly. I think they had these... Did you actually, like, sit down and watch the whole thing? Like,
no.
Oh, because they had these weird, like, robot chicken. Like, actually robot chicken, clearly made. Because it was Seth Green's voice. Like, these inserts in between announcements that were, to me... And I'm someone who likes robot chicken most of the time. I think they usually can be pretty funny. Really awkward and out of place. Weird, just... Why...
Really? You're saying robot chicken is out of place at Nintendo?
Yeah, I know, that seems like a weird... Yeah, like, the thing that's, like, you know, most of their skits are based around, like, horribly awful, violent things happening and a lot of cursing. Yeah, it was weird that it's, like, this really tame robot chicken at Nintendo's thing. It was just really weird. It was a weird... But it was kind of cool because it was weird, but it was a weird thing, that Nintendo Digital event, so... It was more interesting than any other Nintendo Directs have ever been, so there's that.
Okay. So, yeah, I think I've said everything I have said on E3. It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. That is a very good way to describe this E3. It was fine.
It was not overly annoying. It was not the most incredible E3 there's ever been.
We laughed. We cried when we saw that Valiant Hearts dog thing. That was really sad. And then, yeah.
I'm looking forward to a lot of games.
We slept when Brian Michael Bendis was talking about Powers for like 5 hours.
Sure. All right, so let's move on, Sean.
All right.
Two topics, one small, one large. I want to talk a little bit about Watch Dogs.
Let's watch those dogs.
What more have you played of this? Where are you at with the game? What kind of... I feel like your opinion may have shifted a little bit since last time. That's all. So I wanted to ask you about it.
Well, it's been like 5 days since I played it. So I don't remember... I'm honestly trying to remember what was happening in the story the last time I played. I'm still in chapter 2.
Oh my god.
I don't.
Do you want me to go with my thoughts and then
you go? I'm going to try to remember anything I've done in Watch Dogs in the past, like two weeks.
Is it okay if I spoil the story?
I don't give a as seems obvious by the fact that I don't even remember what was happening in the story. All I remember is the girlfriend was kidnapped, and I went to a place.
It's not a girlfriend; it's your sister.
It's a woman was kidnapped, and you're a male protagonist, so you obviously have to rescue her.
Right.
They engage with the same trope twice, and then you were with, like, there's hacker lady
Clara.
Who seems like love interest. So there was love interest protagonist, there was damsel in distress, there was villain. That's what. And then okay. I was at a place where there was, like, you were underground, and I rode in a shipping container to get there, and it seemed like it was a place that you're going to have to come back to several times. It would be really annoying.
It is really
because
annoying.
Every single time you have to go into that shipping container, it's like they have a fast travel system, but you fast travel to outside the shipping container, have to go into the shipping container. It's like Fable 3 all over again. We have to press start and walk to the map. It's just bullshit.
Yes, it is bullshit. And
but and then also they don't even have the common decency to put a fast car there either. So if you want to leave by driving, you have to take the shitty pickup truck that's always spawns there.
And here's the thing. So I did not go and do all the CTOS access points until I finished the game. So every time I loaded into that, I was on that island, and they just give you that truck.
Oh,
fucking goddamn it!
Oh, that would be awful.
Yeah,
I did those whenever I patched them, so I have quite a few fast travel points.
I have them all now, but it's I don't need them anymore. So it's weird. I want to talk about this because
all right,
where I left it, I was in like Act 4 out of 5 of Watch Dogs, and my basic opinion was: look, this story, it's not necessarily bad, because a bad story is something like The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah,
it's
just like...
It's nothing.
Horrifically constructed and just meaningless.
Right. Watch Dogs is just... It's nothing. There's nothing interesting. There's nothing compelling. It's a blank as a story. That doesn't necessarily mean bad, but it's a fucking long shot from good.
Yeah.
now having finished it, Watch Dogs is a bad story.
Okay.
Watch Dogs is a bad campaign. It is a bad story. I don't know if that makes it a bad game, because I've played a lot of it, and I've kept playing steadily since I finished it. It is a bad story. Part of it, I think, I hinted at this last time. I'm going to spoil everything, so here we go.
But does it matter? It doesn't matter.
It does not matter. Nothing.
It'd be like trying to spoil an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck?
No one gives a fuck. Even the one I played, I love Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, but if you told me at the end, you know, it's he kind of redeems himself, I'd be like, okay, I kind of thought that's where it might be going. Yeah,
that seems like where the story was headed.
Yeah.
Were there twists along the way? Yeah, kind of.
Sure.
They're not really important, though.
Yeah. All right. So, yes, Blackbeard dies, but, you know, Blackbeard dies in real life, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's kind of how it goes.
Right. So, anyway, Watch Dogs. I hated the first act of the game. I talked about that last time.
Yeah.
I got briefly interested because Act 2 starts off with a lot of things happening.
Sure, yeah.
And the biggest...
Your apartment blows up. That was kind of cool.
The biggest problem with Watch Dogs as a story consistently is that nothing fucking happens. Like, the first act is just slow and dull, and Aiden is talking about getting revenge, but he's not doing anything about it. And then the rest of the game is you're just basically it's a bunch of fetch quests. So... That's boring, but as Act 2 starts, things are getting underway, and I'm like, okay, maybe this... For a brief time, I was even interested in playing campaign missions for the story because I wanted to see what happens next, you know? You blow up the main character's hideout. That's suitable to get me interested in the next mission. Is that fair to say?
Sure, yeah.
You do that kind of stuff. You meet Clara. That's when you get your base and everything, and so things are happening, but then it grinds to a halt, and where it really gets rough for me is when... So basically, you have to get your sister back from Damien. And what I thought was going to be is Act 2 was just going to be you figuring out a way to find Damien, kill him, get your sister, and then Act 3, we get back to the main story, the revenge thing. But no.
And I want to say that, you know, I have not completed Act 2, but I had the exact same impression as you did when I started Act 2 and she got kidnapped. I was like, oh, this is going to be what Act 2 is about. Like, that seems like an interesting way of, like, maybe making the story almost kind of episodic with these different acts. Like, that's the way it honestly feels like it's being set up when you get into Act 2.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to say it. So you do that, but then what happens is you just at one point give up. And you're like, okay, I'm just going to give in to Damien's demands. And I'm wondering... Why you are a incredibly powerful hacker with an entire fucking hacking base station.
Yeah, that is like underground and there's like a shipping container that you take to get to it. Like you're fucking Batman.
You could find Damien. This would not be hard in the grand scheme of things you do in this game, but whatever.
Yeah.
So you don't choose to do that. Instead, you're going to do Damien's thing. But to do Damien's thing, you have to go... to this, like, apartment complex. It's the projects, basically.
I think that's the last thing I did.
Okay.
Was that I was, like, spent, like, an hour just popping between cameras in that building.
Yes, it's annoying.
And I was like, what am I doing in my life?
Terrible mission. So, yeah, so you have to go to this place.
Destiny Alpha's out soon. I need to just decide to stop this.
Right. So, anyway, you get to this tower, and you need something that's in there because Damien needs it. You really don't understand any of it. So you find out where it is in the tower, but you're like, I can't get into that tower because there's too many people. And I'm thinking, I could kill everyone without getting one hit on me because you are so powerful in this game.
It's like Assassin's Creed all over again.
Yes, but whatever. It's not annoying yet.
Yeah, sure.
But then it's like, okay, to get into that tower, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to make this other guy who works for this gang get me in there. But to get him... to like me, I have to have 5 missions in which I am trying to blackmail this dude. But to blackmail this dude, I have to get blackmail on him. But to get blackmail on him, I have to set him up so that his boss will think, and blah, 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 blah. Finally, you go through all of that. Then you can do the mission at the tower. Then he does his thing. And then guess what? It doesn't work. And it's a failure. And you have to start at battle round 1. And then, do you know how you get into the tower finally? No. You go in there guns blazing. That's how you do it. And it's a good mission, but it's like... why am I an act later doing this?
Yeah.
So Act 2 actually is mostly about the stuff with the gang, which is, I should say, unbelievably racist. All of that content, it is the most absurd...
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that, I remember.
It is the most absurd black caricatures. I mean, it's a step away from blackface at a certain point, the way they are
It reminded me a lot of the dialogue... in this one scene reminded me a lot of Transformers 2.
It did, yes.
And nothing, that's not good.
Like, no,
nothing
it's not good.
Remind you of Transformers 2.
It really does sound like the two black robots in Transformers 2. And the problem is that there are no other black characters in the game. Even the people you run into on the street, if they're black, they're a bad guy. That's just Watch Dogs thinks black people are bad. I don't get that.
French Canadians think that black people are bad. Like, let's be fair.
Okay, sure. Yes, that's a joke. Ubisoft is a French Canadian.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. But anyway,
I'm not racist towards French Canadians. I want to clarify.
So anyway, finally you get the thing you need in there, in the tower. But it's encrypted, and for some reason, you can't decrypt it, and Clara can't decrypt it. And
Hacker Girl.
Hacker Girl can't decrypt it.
It seems like that's the only reason she's in the story in the first place.
Is to decrypt stuff for you. Yeah. There, by the way, there's never a romance with them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you about that later.
So they totally set it up. Like, they do. Like, I was like in like the most ham-fisted, obvious, like, oh, she's the love interest. As soon as you see that she's a woman, it's like, oh, she's the love interest because the other female character in this game is a sister, and then the other female character in this game is dead, and she was his niece.
Yeah, Watch Dogs is sexist also, so let's go with that. In any case, yes, so no one can decrypt it for some reason, even though that is your livelihood and what you do.
Yeah.
So you have to go find this guy who built the base you're in because he can decrypt it because he wrote it or something like that. But to find him, you have to go up to Pawnee, and you have to do all the shit in Pawnee, and you have to do drinking games to find him. And then you find him, but he won't help you unless you help him do this thing. But to help him do this thing, you have to do these five things, and that's the whole game. And that's all of Act 3 is getting him to help you, and then he decrypts it, but he really can't decrypt it, so you have to do five other things.
It occurs to me that Aiden is actually, like, a really bad hacker.
Yes.
And all that happened was someone gave him a really awesome smartphone,
yeah.
And then he started going around being like, I'm the greatest hacker this city has ever seen.
Yes, so you have all of that, and then Act 5 happens. Or the later part of Act 5 is just one mission, but the later part of Act 4 and Act 5, it gets silly. So
now it gets silly.
Now it gets silly. So the whole game, you've resigned yourself to the fact that, all right, they've abandoned the revenge plot, and you're just going after Damien to get your sister back.
Yeah.
But then, out of the blue, your redneck friend, who is the decryptor guy, calls you and says, I've found your sister. Go rescue her. So you're waiting the whole game. You do all these things. None of them matter because one day he just calls you and says, hey, I found her. You go get her. It's an easy mission. She's gone. You kick her out of the city. She goes away with her kid. And that's that. And then you're back there. And then you go back and it's like, I figured out the revenge thing. Like, what? You haven't talked about the revenge thing for, like, 40 hours now. Not really that long. But you haven't talked about it forever.
I mean, depending on your side content. It could be that long. Yeah.
Sure. So, like, you haven't talked about this in forever, but then you find out it's the mob guy who it obviously was always going to be.
Right, yeah. The dude who set up in, like, the third mission and then just, like, disappears for all the other missions. And, like, is he supposed to be the villain?
Yeah.
Because this other guy just turned into the villain and he came out of fucking nowhere in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah. So then you've got, that's the bad guy. You storm his base, which is a hotel, to get him. And the one cool moment from the last, half of the game is that he's behind, like, a bulletproof wall, and what you do is you hack his pacemaker and give him a heart attack.
Nice.
That's kind of cool.
Sure, yeah.
But then the game gets stupid again. So what happens next is that Damien... Oh, I should say, within all this, you found out in a random... Again, this was a random scene. You found out Clara sold your family to Damien or something at one point, or to the bad guy, the mob boss guy. But she didn't know she was doing it because it was just... She's a hacker and she randomly sells data, but she didn't know any of the names or stuff. So you wouldn't think Aiden would be as mad as he is because he does the same kind of thing all the fucking time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he just walks around stealing, like, millions of dollars from random people's bank accounts. Like, they might be like, this person's, undergoing leukemia. I'm chemotherapy. Yeah, fuck it. You don't need it. Right. Medical bills aren't expensive. I'm just going to take all your money now.
Exactly.
I'm going to get a power-up that lets me get more money from your bank account. That's the kind of person I am.
Exactly. So
I'm Aiden Pierce. I'm a hero. I'm the vigilante.
Exactly. So you get mad at Clara and kick her out, and then after you beat the mob boss guy, Clara comes back into the story and she's really guilty.
And
because...
she's like, seriously, dude, like, we're supposed to be, this is a whole love interest thing. Like, it was set up this way. This is the way it's supposed to be. I know it's cliche, but if it's going to be cliche, you might as well fucking do it.
And here's where the game becomes borderline offensive, Sean. So Clara comes in, she feels really guilty, and she wants to help you. And so she says, come meet me somewhere. And then when you get there, you find out she's waiting at your niece's grave.
And seems like a weird place to meet. But...
And that's where she gets shot and killed. On top of your niece's grave, and like blood splattered over the name.
Huh. So women, let's just clarify.
Yes.
So... So they used that trope not one time, not twice, like slightly modified to be fair, but with the sisters, basically the same fucking thing, kidnapping her is killing her.
Right.
So not one time, not twice, three fucking times They have a female character who then gets killed or harmed and assaulted in some way in order to give the main dude his fucking character motivation. They weren't satisfied doing that once, which is fine. Like, I don't have a huge issue with that trope. It's super common and a little bit lazy, but it's like, it's fine. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's like, you only need to do it once. You don't need to do it three fucking times.
With all three female characters.
Yeah, with the only female characters that, or at least for me, those are literally the only female characters I have seen. Well, I don't know if any other get introduced.
Let me tell you about the other female characters in the game, Sean.
All right, Jonathan.
They are all sex slaves, and that's not a euphemism. They are literally, you infiltrate a sex slavery ring, and you don't liberate it. What the fuck, Aiden? You save one woman who you use to get in there because you're trying to... I don't even remember what the plot is here, but they're selling women. It's human trafficking.
Yeah.
But it's like, so either you see a young woman being killed, the little girl. Mm-hmm. You see a young mother being kidnapped. You see a young female hacker getting killed. Or you see a bunch of young women naked and being sold for sex slavery. Those are literally the only representations of women in this game. That is a problem.
Yeah, that's like, I can't believe they did it a third time. Like, it already was baffling enough when it's like they used the same lame plot device twice. I was fucking flabbergasted. I was like, this is the whole setup of the game, and you made it pointless by giving him this other character motivation that cheapens your only other female character. But then it's like they introduce another female character, and I thought it's like, you know, sure, the love interest position is not necessarily interesting and is cliche and it also kind of sucks, but it's better than having the character being fucking killed for the dude's character motivation.
Right.
It's like,
so we need one last motivation at the end of the game. So she gets killed, Damien killed her, or Damien sent guys to kill her. Now you have to go after Damien, and the last mission of the game is Damien, just out of the blue, has gotten control over all of CTOS, and you have to find him, and this is one of the most annoying missions I have ever played in any game ever, where you have to drive through the city and you have to go to like five satellite points and install something. But while you're going there, Damien is, he's, you know, blowing up steam pipes and stuff like that. But more than that, he's fucking with your hacking software. And so for some reason, the visuals of the game start getting fucked up and like everything's getting fucked and you can't see and it keeps cutting out. Does Aiden have visual implants? I thought he was just looking at his phone.
But that's it. It's a commentary about how we see the world through our technology, Jonathan. I don't know how you didn't get that. You know?
But no, it's not. It's like, it's so stupid because the pretense up to then is that he's looking at his phone to see all this. But now it's, he has visual implants. I don't get it. It's so weird and it's almost impossible to play just because it's fucking with you so much. Mm-hmm. And it's really annoying, and you've got a 5-star wanted level the whole time. And then finally you get to Damien. He's on a lighthouse. It's the ending of GTA 4. You go there. Your Chinese friend from the beginning betrays you. You kill him. You kill Damien. And then Aiden gives a speech about he's this hero this city needs.
Yeah, I'm the vigilante. Yeah. Everybody in my life has died. It's all my fault.
Yes.
This was a horrible, horrible series of events. I'm a terrible human being, but I'm the hero of this story.
Yes, and I do think the last line of the game is, I'm the vigilante. I really do. I think that's what it is.
I hope it is, because that's... If I were writing Watch Dogs... If I was writing the last line of Watch Dogs based on everything else I had seen so far, I would end it with Aiden Pierce going, I'm the vigilante.
And then what happens in the end credits is halfway through, it loads back in, and remember Maurice, the guy you kidnapped in the first scene? And your Chinese friend has just been keeping in a bunker the entire time?
Yeah, the character that it's like every once in a while... was Jordy calls you and is like, Maurice is, and I'm like, okay, like it's just like to remind you that dude exists, and it's like I didn't even really remember who he was or what he was doing.
He's introduced in the first mission that you've got Maurice because he can give you information, but the entire time you're just keeping him locked in a cell somewhere.
Yeah, like they never, like you never see him.
No,
like you never. It's like there's no mission about him. Like where I was, it was just like literally, it felt like at the end of every single mission, you would get a call from Jordy, and Jordy would be like, hey, remember your pal Maurice?
Yeah.
He's still not doing anything. It's like,
right.
And I don't remember my pal Maurice anymore.
And here's the kicker, Sean. Maurice never does anything. He never gives you any information that helps you find the bad guys, ever. But the mid-credits scene, they bring Maurice back in, you walk in, and you have a choice to either shoot him or leave him there, which in which case he will also die because he's been there alone for days in a garage. tied to a chair.
Wait, so... So they took the shitty thing they did with Far Cry 3's ending, which was, out of nowhere, giving you this weird multiple ending, where it's like...
This is not... I should say, this is not a multiple ending. It's, if you shoot him, the game just cuts to black. If you walk out, the game just cuts to black. That's all
there is. Yeah, but it's like, but still, like, this choice. Right. Like, gives you this choice out of nowhere, where nowhere else in the game did it ever give you a choice. And all of a sudden, at the very end... They give you this stupid fucking choice. It's like, pull right trigger for this, pull left trigger for that. It's like, comes out of nowhere and is awful. It's like, they took that shitty idea, and not only was it, like, that bad, they then put it in as the post, like, credits thing?
Yeah.
That's awful!
And it's the most, like, sickening thing in the game, because you realize for fucking months, I've been keeping this poor, you know, dude just locked in a basement somewhere.
It's like, I don't even remember what Maurice looks like!
Yeah.
I barely remember anything about him!
So you've just been... You've been
I don't even remember why he knows anything in the first place.
You've kidnapped and tortured this man, and your choices are either murder him or leave him there to starve to death in his own filth and excrement. I think the shooting is the better moral option at that point.
Either way, I'm the vigilante.
And I mean, that's so much of the problem, is that there is nothing in this game that is not Aiden Pierce's fault. He is a horrible human being. But it's like, it's the amazing Spider-Man 2 problem, where Peter Parker in that movie is an awful person.
Yeah.
He does everything wrong.
But the movie, like, the plot just bends itself over backwards to make it so it's like nothing is actually his fault.
And Watch Dogs,
technically speaking.
Yeah, Watch Dogs is the same thing. Yeah. It's like, they put it, in fact, they put all the, this is what's offensive, is that they put all the blame on Clara at a certain point.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck you guys. It's everything. It's they keep killing women to make Aiden look good. That's fucked up. That's really fucked up.
Oh my god.
So, I mean, the story gets actively awful near the end. The gameplay gets actively awful near the end. You've got the one cool moment with the pacemaker, but even then, you fucking give him a heart attack, and then the dude talks for 10 fucking minutes or something. It just goes on and on.
Games. It's like when you stab people in Assassin's Creed, and then they give you, like, this whole speech before they die, and, like,
the netherworld.
In cyberspace or wherever the fuck you are.
Yeah. It's not good. It sapped a lot of my enthusiasm. I've kept playing it probably because I get home at the end of the day and I'm tired, and Watch Dogs takes literally no brain power to play.
I get you.
But I don't think it's healthy for me. Like, I should play something that challenges me a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mentally.
Wow.
So... I really don't know what to say about Watch Dogs, because I don't think it's a bad game, because I have fun playing it. But then again, story matters. I think it does.
That's like half the fucking game is the campaign, you know?
It's just... And I don't know. It's something that made me think, though, if Grand Theft Auto V had better gameplay, if I'd enjoyed the shooting, if the driving had been a little tighter for me, would I have had any problems with Grand Theft Auto V? I really do wonder it, because at a certain point, Watch Dogs has its story can't touch the absolute worst stuff in GTA V.
Yeah,
it's terrible. The GTA V story gets, I think, really underwhelming at a certain point, but it's never bad.
Yeah,
and I think it's got interesting, vivid characters at a minimum. But I got bored with that game in part because I didn't have a lot of fun playing it. And with Watch Dogs, at least, even when the story was awful, I think the shooting is so good, and I think a lot of the other gameplay systems are fun enough that it kept me going with it. So I'm interested. I will say, when GTA 5 comes out on PS4, if they revamp the shooting, I will buy that for a full $60. That's just something I feel like in that game was so subpar and out of date that it kind of marred that experience for me. But
you did play it on a DualShock 3, didn't you? So that's just like...
That didn't matter. That wasn't it.
I don't know if it would matter to me.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's go ahead and move on.
Yeah.
Watch Dogs, I don't know.
I'm really happy you told me, because like, I'm not necessarily just going to stop playing Watch Dogs, because it's like, I do have fun playing it. I think the game is fun to play. This is, like, that part of it's fun. But I'm really happy that even if I do stop playing it, I know just how bad it gets. That's really satisfying.
It really is. Act 2 is both the height and lowest point of the game, because you get that titillation of there might be something interesting, and then it's, you know, 30 missions of having to go through this tower with cameras and getting the black people to like you and then killing them all. I mean, it's... And then it just... You feel creepy playing it because it is so racist. Yeah. And sexist.
God, dude, that fucking mission where you're hacking into those cameras. Like, it just goes on and on and on for no good reason. Like, it only needed to be, like, 3 minutes.
And you have
because I understand why. It's like, oh, you want to establish, like, this place and this gang and stuff. It's like, that's fine. You don't have to spend, like, half my day doing this goddamn stupid camera shit.
And you have to basically do it all again when you guide the younger game member through the building. But this time it's even more annoying because you have to guide him with the cameras.
Fuck, that sounds awful.
Yeah. It's awful. Don't quit with the campaign. Just quit while you're ahead.
Yeah, just go do more criminal convoy missions.
And sure.
Drive up with a semi loaded with IEDs and just blow it up.
All right. Sean, you want to talk about a better game?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I want to play a better game, but since that's not an option available to me at the moment, I guess we can just talk about it.
Destiny, Bungie's first game since stopping development on the Halo franchise with Halo Reach in 2010. This is their new persistent world first-person shooter. New mythology, new engine. They've spent $500 million making and marketing this thing.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of expectations going into it, especially for us. We are huge Bungie fans. I think I speak for both of us when I say Bungie is part of the reason we are as into gaming as we are.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's the first Halo was a huge game for me. So.
Yeah, all of them were huge games.
Yeah, but I mean, especially the first Halo.
Yeah, definitely. And so we've been very excited for their new game, Destiny. It was announced at Sony's E3 press conference that there would be a pre-release alpha available exclusively for the PS4 from last week, Thursday, to this Sunday, that it was extended to Monday, ended Monday night. Sean, you got in on Thursday. I got in on Saturday morning. We have both played a lot of it, including all three classes. What do you think of Destiny so far?
I was blown away by it. I thought, like, and again, this is something that you need to sort of... Because I've played actually quite a few, like, pre-release games and stuff, and betas, and early access shit on Steam and stuff. And so it's like, I feel like I've managed to get a pretty good mindset when you're approaching pre-released content. Which, okay, we should just address this right away. It being called an alpha...
It's ridiculous.
Is not, like, if you know anything about, like, what an alpha is for a video game, this is not an alpha. It is much more a beta. It is clearly there... as a network test primarily, and like probably somewhat as a balance test as well, but it's not an alpha. Like, it's just not. So
it's so polished.
Yeah, it's a very polished piece of content, like this slice of the game. But so it's like, so you whenever you're approaching pre-release content for a game, you need to approach it with a certain mindset. And I feel like if you do approach this with that mindset of like being able to look at what you are given and extrapolate out what the rest of the game is going to be, like, I think like this is going to be a massive, just awesome game when it comes out. Just if like they are able to execute the rest of the content being as polished and interesting, the rest of the missions and levels being up to the quality that this slice of content alludes to, I think this will be like one of the best games ever. Like bar none, I think it's going to be like a really sort of innovative title with the way, we'll talk about that more later, but with the way it combines MMO gameplay design and a traditional Bungie first-person shooter gameplay design and marries them together into something very new. It's sort of, to me, one of the most exciting games exciting game things I've played since Call of Duty 4 and Call of Duty 4's multiplayer in particular. That was a huge moment of them taking multiplayer first-person shooter design and RPG progression mechanics and combining them together into a very addictive, persistent new kind of multiplayer. It feels like that to me. And even more than all of that, you know, they gave you a small amount of content for, like, obviously what the rest of Destiny was going to be. Just to iterate, you started with a level 3 character. There were 3 classes with a pre-assigned subclass, so there will be different subclasses in the actual game, and you could play from level 3 to level 8. There was one story mission. It's set in one area, old Russia, which you've seen in some of the marketing and stuff. So their one story mission, you could explore around the old Russia map, which was extensive, but one of presumably several maps, like single player maps that are going to be in the full game. There was one strike, like co-op mission, and then one multiplayer type with 2 maps on it. So it is a wide variety of content. It feels like they gave you like one thing from all the stuff you could do in Destiny, but it's like it's this like horizontal slice of content that they provide you, so you get like the breadth of the game, but like not like the whole like depth and scope of it, you know. So even with that slight offering that they give you, I played it so much. I absolutely loved that alpha, and I played everything you could. I leveled up all three classes to level 8. I played that like Devil Strike mission over and over and over again. I played the multiplayer quite a lot as well. So I played everything you could out of this alpha, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and here's one of my questions.
Okay.
Were you expecting, even as excited as you were for Destiny, to go into this pre-release alpha, beta, whatever you want to call it, and enjoy it this much, this immediately, with this small amount of content?
No, because like for me, I think for me the thing, it was really surprising to me because I don't think Bungie has been, or Activision with the marketing, have been especially clear on exactly what Destiny was. Like, there was this, you know, you had some idea of, like, it's got a full single-player component to it, but it's, you know, you have kind of, there's some, like, element of, like, the Journey multiplayer, there's, you know, these public events that they've shown, you know that there's going to be some kind of competitive multiplayer, there's going to be, like, co-op missions, it's like they've kind of, and you know that it's going to have, like, sort of, kind of like Borderlands, like, first-person shooter with gear and loot, so it's like they've kind of said that stuff and shown some of it, but it's something that's like you don't understand what the game is until you play it. And for me, because I've had extensive experience with MMO RPGs, specifically World of Warcraft, which I played quite a bit several years ago, and obviously I have a huge amount of experience with Bungie first-person shooters, and it's like I had no idea that it was an MMO. Like, it is an MMO. It's different from MMOs. Like, it doesn't have, like, the same kind of persistent world. It doesn't have the server structure of, like, you pick a server that has, like, 2,000-some whatever players on it, and all those players exist on the same server at the same time, in the world at the same time. You know, obviously it doesn't have MMO combat. It has a lot of differences from MMOs, but it does take the core of an MMO and the social aspect of it that I really enjoy. And, like, that is the backbone to me of what Destiny is, and I had no idea. I had absolutely no fucking clue that that's what it was. So that was really exciting and sort of and eye-opening to me of, like, that's what this game is. And I had no idea that that's what I wanted it to be, but that's exactly what I wanted it to be. Like, that's exactly what I want from a game. That's something, an experience that, to me, it feels familiar, but very new and exciting and different at the same time.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with everything you've said so far, and I think for me the big surprise was being dropped into this and immediately getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't played MMOs. That's just not a genre I've explored before, but I just felt I got what Destiny was at a game. The pitch it was making to me right away, it worked for me. So you get dropped in, and first they show you that, you know, very characteristic Bungie message of thanks and support.
Yeah,
and you get that and the music, and immediately I'm like, oh, I'm excited for this. Mm-hmm. And then you get dropped in the world, and Peter Dinklage is talking to you, and you've got this big open map to go through, and you've got these really cool weapons, but you've also got this fucking glider thing,
the speeder bike,
which is amazing to use. Yeah. And you start doing combat, and you're like, this is like Halo, but it isn't like Halo.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start moving around, and you're like, this looks a little like a Halo map, except it's so much bigger, and there's more directions to go in, and you play that first mission, and you're like, I get it right away why this game is special. And then it opens up, and you really start to see the more MMO-ish aspects of it. Of you have the main tower you return to, mm-hmm. and the way they do item management and upgrades and that kind of thing, and how you customize your character and your class, and how the strike mission works, and how the co-op works, and it's just all of it. That entire alpha is mostly filled. I don't like the competitive multiplayer so far, but we'll talk about that later. Mm. But other than that, and it's such a small slice, you can't even make a judgment on it yet. But with everything else in the game, it's just so confident and so assured in what it is. And what it is so good and so immediately fun and so immediately just involving. You know, I got into the world and I just wanted to explore and look at the graphics and hear the music and see what it looked like and how it played and felt. And, you know, I was so much more in awe of and having fun with and invested in this, in the small amount of content we had in this alpha, than I was for the entire game Watch Dogs, which I paid $60 for.
Yeah, I definitely feel that way.
It's an alpha. I mean, it's not literally an alpha, but it's this pre-release beta kind of thing.
Yeah, this tiny slice of content.
How could this have been that immersive? Because you and I know, sunk a lot of our weekends into this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I wish I could go home tonight and play more of it. It's so phenomenal.
It's a really effective marketing thing, which that's part of what, like, betas are these days, is, you know, for big games, they're marketing tools. Yeah. And it's like, holy fucking shit, dude, I want to play this game. Although I'm also kind of sad because, you know, obviously this is going to be the case, and it has to be this way, and it's probably better that it's this way. But all the characters got wiped, and it's like, I I'm gonna miss my hunter. Like, I spent a lot of time with that dude. That, like, I made that hunter guy. He was as powerful, I think, as you could get a character to be in that fucking alpha.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, you really do forge an emotional connection to it right away. And I still don't know anything about the story. Like, I very intentionally kept myself... I have not watched any of the Destiny videos or stuff. I want to experience it when I'm playing it. So, really, in the alpha, you're just kind of getting hints of the story mythology. And yet, it's one of... This is what I always say about sci-fi universes, is that a good sci-fi universe, I think you can get just as much out of it by looking at something in that universe than by hearing exposition. Sure, and that's something about Destiny. I mean, like, production design and art design and those kinds of things, if it's a fully realized sci-fi universe, those are all equally important. And I think Destiny really has that from, you know, what is the design of your character? How do they look? What do the weapons look and feel and sound like? What does the environment look and feel and sound like?
Yeah.
Why is Peter Dinklage there talking to you and that kind of thing? And what does the bike sound like and those sorts of things? You get so much flavor. It feels like such a distinct universe. It feels like a Bungie game, very, very much like a Bungie game, very characteristic of them. But it's not Halo. It's something I haven't seen before. It's new, and it's exciting on that level and on a lot of other levels too.
Yeah.
I mean, just in terms of gameplay, this is as polished as any major release I've ever played.
And yeah, I mean, it's more polished than some major releases, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just the basic combat stuff is so much fun. And it isn't Halo. It's got Halo in its DNA, obviously.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's bigger than that. Like, I think in some ways they've kind of taken what the core of Halo was and kind of exploded it outwards. So the big, you know, I think one of the big genius innovations of Halo and something Bungie did well in all of their Halo games is the idea of these open combat scenarios.
Yeah.
Where the enemies are not in a hallway that you have to go down and take cover behind boxes and shit. The world just exists and they're in it and you're in it and you can kind of approach any combat encounter however you want, and they're not all equally valid ways of doing it.
Yeah.
But they're all ways you can do it. You're not cut off from certain things.
Yeah.
And I think Destiny just takes that and makes it the philosophy of the entire game. So that first mission, you can kind of go about it however you want, however long it takes you, however short amount of time it takes you. And then, you know, when you actually get into fights with enemies, that entire map is your battlefield.
Yeah.
And you can really use it. And you see that, you know, just the act of taking cover, it's an identical cover system to Halo. You just crouch, but you do it in a very different way because you're not... It feels like suddenly the Halo combat scenarios feel restrictive in a weird way. Because Destiny is so much more open. And I feel like that's just the idea behind all of that. I mean, when you play the Strike, which I think both of us would agree was the highlight of this alpha.
Yeah, it was my favorite part, yeah.
Yeah. Just having that with the persistent, you know, online co-op, and then the way it's laid out and stuff, it's like this, it's this ordered and directed mission, because you have to get to the end and do this thing and kill this enemy. But along the way, it is this kind of big open world you're fighting through.
Yeah, and that the way they, like, the boss fights in the Strike are designed, which there are two, is that it feels like, you know, because I've probably played that Strike at least 6 times, if not more than that. And so, like, the way those boss fights are designed, it's like there's so many different strategies you can use. And, like, you know, obviously it's, at the end of the day, you're trying to shoot the boss in the weak point, but it's like, how you do that, it can be so different. And I've seen, you know, every single time I played it, I played it a little bit differently, and I learned, and that's why I played it so many times, and it felt like an MMO raid or dungeon in that way of, like, you know, you every single time you play it, because this kind of content is designed to be replayed, because that's part of the sort of the progression of the game, is it's not just leveling up, it's once you get to the max level, it's getting better and better gear. And so, like, you need to replay these kinds of missions over and over to get the better gear from defeating the bosses. And the fact that you can learn so much and apply different strategies every single time you play it makes it highly replayable and highly rewarding, not just in that, like, you know, obviously the carrot on the stick is getting better gear and you really want to get the better gear, but it's also fun to play because it's like every time you go in you have different gear which enables different strategies and you've learned something from the last time you've played it and you've gotten better at the game. You can use that to fight these really, really challenging encounters, which they are very challenging.
Yeah, you know, the hardest part of that Strike, to me at least, was the big tank you fight outside the big door.
Yeah, the Devil Walker.
Yeah, the Devil Walker. And I played the Strike twice, and it was interesting to me, the first time playing it and the second time playing it, I fought the Devil Walker very differently, but even throughout the encounter, I would play it differently. So, like, my second time, which was our successful run against the Devil Walker, it would be like, you know, that was probably like a half hour of gameplay was getting past that guy.
Sure, yeah. Some of those Strike runs, they can take a long time, yeah.
Yeah, And but it's just throughout that, it's just I would find different places. Like I would start in one place that I thought was good, and I realized, you know what, I've got an idea, and I would find a better place on the map. And that's why I mean this open world. It's so dynamic. That entire place is your battleground, and I don't think there's any wrong way to approach
it. Yeah, that there's like some of the ways I went about it is like, you know, there are kind of three different ways. This maybe is getting too specific, but it's like there's three ways you can kind of be up close and use your primary weapon to shoot the Devil Walker.
And I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. There's like there's the middle path, the right path where there's this alleyway, and then the left side where there are these pillars that you can hide behind. And that was like, that's kind of like the obvious way to go about it. But then also like way farther back, there's this big building that you can stand on that building and have a full view of everything that is there. So if you have a sniper rifle or a scout rifle, you can stand from that building and pick off, I'm going to call these adds, which are in MMO terminology, they are enemies that get added to the, like, add-ons. They are added to the encounter as the encounter's going on. So as you're fighting the Devil Walker, different enemies spawn in. So one thing I did one time was I stood up there because I had recently acquired a really good sniper rifle with my hunter, and I spent almost the entire encounter standing up on that building, dodging the Devil Walker when it would turn its attention on me, and then using my sniper to kill all the adds in the encounter so that the other two guys could just focus on the Devil Walker. And then another time when I got a really good shotgun, I had this crazy idea of, like, you know, I'm a hunter. One of the main, like, the stat angle for the hunter is that he's really fast. He has a faster move speed, he has a higher jump, a faster jump, and a double jump that's really quick. So it's like, and I've got this fucking awesome shotgun, so I'm just going to get right up in there and deal as much damage as close as I possibly can. And so I got, like, right up into the Devil Walker, and he has an attack where he, like, kind of knocks you away and has this big sort of, like, EMP kind of thing that takes out your shield. But I've, like, gotten to a rhythm of where I could, you know, just do damage to him with a couple of shots from the shotgun and then quickly dart out of the encounter, reload, like, dodge his attack, and then go back in. And it's like, that's, you know, that's, like, five different strategies there that is like I used and figured out playing that strike. And there's got to be a bunch of other ones that I didn't even see.
Yeah, I would. What I finally kind of what worked for us on my run that was successful on that was that there's that right path you talk about with that alleyway.
Yeah.
But there's also a snowbank kind of to the left, and if you go down there, you can just kind of dart out and you're at the perfect position to get the legs, but also if he fires, you can just duck down and you'll kind of slide down. Mm. And it's a really cool moment because the map will be like shaking while you're doing that. And it's like you're diving into cover, but it's actually a really effective place because even adds and stuff, they really can't get to you there. Mm-hmm. You would know if they're coming up on you. So but it's just little things like that. Those moments of discovery are so much of what makes it fun.
Yeah.
And I do think just the shooting is so satisfying.
Yeah, it definitely. It was one of the reasons why I played it so much is that, like, I would spend so much time in that exploration mission just sort of walking around and seeing the map, because the map is so expansive and so detailed that there's all these little hidey holes and little pathways leading off to different areas and shit that I kept on finding up until the alpha closed. But it's like one of the reasons I was so engaging is that every time I would run into a random encounter, it was like the shooting just feels good. The sound design is good. Like it feels like Halo, but it's slightly different. Like they, you know, probably the biggest change is just, you know, every gun has aim down sights. But I do like that it's still like the basic like fire from the hip sort of reticle is a lot tighter than it is in a Call of Duty style game.
Right.
So especially if your gun has a really like high accuracy. So it still feels like if you want to, you can play most of the game with the right gun. Like, I had this one scout rifle that was like, unless I was really far away, I never aimed down sights because it was just faster to pick off a headshot Halo style. So it feels like, honestly, it feels like a much better, more organic and natural blend of the Halo and Call of Duty shootings, like combat styles, than what Halo 4 kind of tried to do a little bit with its multiplayer. I feel like this is a really good compromise of it's still feeling like Halo, the movement still feels a lot like Halo, the jumps are high, like your natural run speed is much faster than it is in a Call of Duty style game, and the AI is very good. The AI is very Halo-like, that it will take cover, it will retreat from fights, it will try to flush you out of cover, and it's not like stand in one spot and shoot kind of AI that a lot of Call of Duty games are. So like you have this sort of like combat dance that you get into that is a lot like Halo, but you still have this sort of like, you like the kill speeds are much faster. You die a lot. Like your shield goes down faster than it would in a Halo game. Especially in multiplayer, the kill times are much, much quicker. And having that ability to aim down sights sort of slows down the game and brings that accuracy to it that the Halo shooting didn't have, because it was a lot more upfront and kinetic, I felt.
Absolutely. And I think there's just some little things to combat that bring in some of those MMO and RPG elements in a really impressive, uncluttered way. So, for instance, every enemy, they want you to see what kind of health they have and what kind of damage you're doing. And it's, I think they just did it in a way that's really clever, because it this could so easily clutter the screen up, but it doesn't. Yeah. So every enemy, when you look at it, it's got its level, and it's got a health bar.
It's got its name.
Right, its name. And then when you're shooting it, little numbers fly off telling you what you've done. Yeah. It's yellow if it's heavy damage, white if it's normal damage. And it's just, that's such an efficient, clever, subtle way to do that.
Yeah.
But it's really, I think for this kind of game, it's crucial information, and yet it doesn't clutter the screen or make it look ugly or anything like that.
Yeah, all the UI design is very crisp and slick.
Yeah.
And very clear and I've very seen, easy to read.
And I'm obviously this is a different beast, but you know, I've seen what some MMORPGs wind up looking like on consoles, and it's just like, oh god.
I mean, fuck consoles, like...
Yeah.
Man, when you get high level in something like World of Warcraft, like the number of abilities you have, where you have to download like third-party add-ons, mods, to be able to like organize your screen, because it's like you will literally have like your main hot bar that you start with at the bottom, and then like two other hot bars that you added up on top of it, and then two on the left side of the screen, and then two on the right side of the screen. And it's like you have like all these hotkey configurations where it's like, you know, here's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 and like half like the fucking letter keys, and then all of those with control as a modifier, then all of those with alt as a modifier, and then all of those with shift as a modifier, and there's still some abilities that I need to click on if I want to use them. And you need to use like all of them sometimes. It's maddening.
Yeah. And obviously Destiny isn't going to become that complex, but I think there are hints in the alpha of where the complexity is going to come in and how they're going to balance it out. So I liked just seeing the upgrade screen. There are very few upgrades you can get in those 8 levels, but it kind of shows you how they're going to cascade and build on one another.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's never going to get to a point where it becomes too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Like it looks very, very smart in that way. I like how just easily on the fly you can swap your weapons out and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It just feels very user-friendly, and you know, I think, you know, I've never played MMOs, but I have heavy experience with first-person shooters and Bungie first-person shooters in particular, so I have something like that coming into it, but I feel like even if you'd never really played the genre before, I think you could come into Destiny and it would be welcoming.
It feels very approachable, because it's also very telling that, you know, obviously we are, like, both really experienced video game players.
Yeah.
But they do, like, the alpha just drops you in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Right.
And gives you a waypoint, but it still feels, like, really approachable and engageable. And it's like, when stuff happens, it's like, you don't feel like you're mystified by it. You know that I feel like a lot of times you play demos for games, just things occur, and you're like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what this shit is. It's like, it feels very clear that, like, I figured out what the currency was, like, immediately. Like, it wasn't this, like, process of, like, what is currency? Like, how do I get it? It's like, it's all very clear and very obvious that every time you kill someone, the amount of experience and the amount of glimmer, which is the currency you get, appears on the right side of the screen and pops up for a little bit and then goes away. And it's like where your experience bar is very clearly labeled. Like what your abilities are is very clearly labeled, and your cooldowns. Like it's all really immediately readable. It's one of the best UIs I've ever seen.
Absolutely. I mean, I counter like Destiny with like Titanfall, which I love Titanfall, but if you were to throw someone who hadn't played a game like that into Titanfall, they would go run screaming out of the room.
Sure.
I mean, you have to have played games like Titanfall to get Titanfall. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing, but I think it's amazing that I wouldn't blame Destiny if it felt a little less intuitive. But it feels completely intuitive, I think, no matter what you're approaching it from, and that's an achievement.
Yeah, it reminds me of something like, and obviously these games have a bigger sort of like thing to tackle, but something like Skyrim or Oblivion, like those Elder Scrolls games, like those inventories are so unmanageable of like you can pick something up and then don't know like where it is in your inventory, because it's like you don't know, like I picked up this thing, I wasn't even quite sure what the thing was, but I think it was something I was supposed to pick up, but I don't know where in my inventory to go to, or if I do know how to go to it, like I don't know what to hit to figure out what it is. You know, I like, there's tons of games that have user interfaces like that it's like I don't know how to approach.
And
with Destiny, it was like really clear and obvious.
I mean, it's honestly, it's one of the reasons I've never played the Elder Scrolls games.
Sure,
they just seem kind of impenetrable at a certain point.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah,
especially if you're playing the older ones are way worse about that.
Well, I'm not going to ever, but yeah.
Yeah, don't play Morrowind. Don't.
That wasn't a plan. I've got plenty of other better old games I could play, I'm sure. Yes, but anyway, it's an interesting thing, and you're right about the interface. I think also when you get into the tower, which is like your main hub area for this slice of the game, it's just, that's all very intuitive. I like how that moves into a third-person perspective, but it doesn't feel out of place.
Yeah, and I really like that, because it almost took me a second to notice that it was in third-person, and I was like, huh, that's kind of weird, and then I realized that it's like, oh, like, that gives you an opportunity to connect with your character in a way that you do with the MMOs. It's just like, you know, you have your armor, and you would never be able to see your armor other than in your inventory screen, so it said when you go to the tower. Now, a part of the huge draw of these loot games, especially, like, for me, I don't love the Diablo style like action RPG loot games, because it's like it feels so isolated because it's mostly just single player. Whereas in an MMO, it's like if I get a cool fucking sword and this bitch and cape, like it kind of defeats the purpose of getting that stuff if I don't have anyone to show it to. Whereas like if you go to in World of Warcraft, if you go to Stormwind City, or here you go to the tower and it's like, oh, my guy looks fucking awesome because I got this like really cool piece of armor, or the gun on my back is really awesome. You can show that off to random people and like get this sort of like ego boost of like, yeah, like look at that level 2 dude or level 3 dude over there with like the basic starting gear, and mine's all like coordinated and awesome looking and shit.
Yep. But let's talk about the best part of the Destiny Alpha.
Yes, okay. I wonder, because there's something that I would say here. I want to hear what you're going
to
say here.
It's the speeder you get that you can drive around.
I was going to say the fact that you can dance.
The fact that you can dance is pretty good, yeah.
The fact that you can dance, because that was, like, that was for me the moment when I fully understood what Destiny was, is I beat that tiny little story mission they give you, I went back to the tower, and then I went up to, like, the fucking merchant or whatever, like, the guy you need to go talk to. I talked to that dude, and he was standing in front of a table, and on that table, there were two different players, and they were both dancing, and I was like, this is a fucking MMO. I don't care what else it is. This is a fucking MMO because there are player characters in a spot they really shouldn't be, and they are dancing, and everybody else in the tower, instead of walking places, they're jumping everywhere because everyone who plays video games, I don't think they're even conscious of it. They jump constantly when they move, and it looks fucking ridiculous, but it's great because it's like everyone's in on how ridiculous it is, and it's like,
yeah,
fuck it. I, like, you know, I've spent a lot of the last day of the Destiny Alpha was on just sort of like wandering around and fucking around in the tower, and it's like I was with this one other dude where there were like these weird little, like, you know, there's that fence facing where the big traveler orb thing is, and it's like you can jump over that fence and get on these tiny little outcroppings that like extend a little bit out. There's kind of feels like you're not supposed to be there, but you can get on them, and me and this other dude were on them, we were just dancing.
Yep. And I love that they've devoted the entire D-pad to dancing, sitting, high-fiving. Yeah.
That I wish, and maybe this is something they'll integrate into the game. It's like, I hope you can get like different emotes and put them on there. It's like, obviously you'd always want dance. It's right. Like sometimes, you know, maybe I don't want point, I want like something else that's like an emote that says like, hey, I'm sorry or something. Like, yeah, that would be cool if you could get different ones.
I wouldn't be surprised if that shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I love, so if you don't know, if you haven't played the game, when you're just, you know, playing in the first person mode, you've got this, it's called Ghost, which is like your robot assistant. It's character.
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, it's Peter Dinklage.
It's little robot Peter Dinklage.
Right. It does not look like Peter Dinklage. It sounds like him, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is him. But.
Right. But anyway, and you can bring Ghost up, and it's your navigator, but also when you bring Ghost up, you can summon a vehicle, and it just kind of materializes under you, and it's this hover, like, speeder bike thing.
Yeah, basically, it looks a lot like, it's clearly very much inspired by the speeder bike from Return of the Jedi on Endor, like, yeah, that kind of look.
And I just, that thing controls so well, and it is so fun to drive around. You use L2 to boost it, and that's so cool. And it makes one of the most awesome sound effects I've ever heard in anything.
It's just some of the best sound design, where it's again, like, you know, drawing from his inspiration. It's a very Star Wars-y sound effect, but it's like, fucking shit, it is such a great sound. And it's like, and there's so many layers to it too, where it's like, it's just like the normal hovering sound, and then the accelerating noise, and then the boost noise, and then every once in a while, this Star Wars does this, which is great, and like a lot of their sound stuff of like, it'll just make this cool, like, you don't even know why it made this noise, but it's like, and you're like, I don't know why it just did, it just made that noise. I don't know what that indicates, but it sounded fucking awesome.
But I mean, I would just get to the Cosmodrome and just, you know, just drive all around, yeah, old Russia, and in that fucking speeder bike, because it is so much fun to play. And it's not just the sounds. The sounds are amazing,
it's Bungie doing their first-person shooter vehicles. They understand how to get that to control, and it controls most like the Ghost from Halo, but it still has its, yeah, sort of its own unique feeling to the control that it's like, it feels like you have a huge amount of control over how it moves, but also it feels a little bit out of control to me. It's like, like it's got this great sense of like, you can, you know, it's a hover bike, so it's not, you know, tied to the ground in any way, so it can like sort of, it sways back and forth with this really great sort of like rhythmic motion.
It's so fun to use. It
controls so well.
And it's such a great tool for gameplay, actually, because it's so, that map is so big, and if one of my favorite parts is that they have a bunch of quests for you to do in that area, which is really fun to do. But, you know, you use it to get around places, but also I feel like in combat sometimes, if you are pinned down and you are fucked, just summon your vehicle and shoot out of there. It works really well, and it's one of the moments that really, I just fell in love with the game and really just felt it, was when I was in a combat scenario that I was underleveled for, and I was kind of fucked, but I was like, what do I do? And this is the only game where this is an option. Just, you know, summon your bike, it materializes, get out of there, get my health back, and then go back for round two. That's a moment that feels so unique. And it's...
Yeah, or like the flip side of that, I remember when I was playing as my warlock, and I was in that the exploration mission, so it's like, that's where, especially like, you know, the random players just sort of like exist in the same world together, very Journey style. I remember I was zooming around on my speeder bike, and it was like in sort of that area where it's like a lot of like level 5 enemies were, and there was some dude who was like level 4 that clearly he like just dropped in. He was pinned down by a bunch of the fallen, and so I was on my speeder bike, and I think my guy was like level 6 or 7 at that point, and my super was charged, and I saw that guy was pinned down and all the fallen were clustered together, and I was like, I know how to do this. And so I zoomed over, my Sparrow hit a jump, went up in the air, I jumped off of my Sparrow in midair, like initiated my glide, and then used my super. So it's like I just jump off my speeder bike and use his supernova bomb, which just shoots this huge like energy orb which crashed into the middle of the fallen and just blew them all and disintegrated them all into pieces, and landed, like my speeder bike landed right near me. I walked back over to it, got on, and just zoomed away into the sunset. It was like, I don't know if that guy appreciated what I just did, but I sure feel like a fucking badass.
And there's just so many moments like that. I think the next logical thing to talk about is, so we got these three classes, Titan, Hunter, and Warlock. I don't want to go into too much detail on all of them, just because I think we're running short on time here. Yeah, okay. But, I mean, it's interesting to me, when you just start out playing with them, the differences are not immediately noticeable, I didn't think, but the more time you spend with them, the more they really feel like, that's the limitation of the alpha, is that you're just touching the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that it feels like, hopefully what happens, and also, again, like, there are subclasses. I don't know what subclasses are, I don't know what that means. It's like, it's clearly a thing in the game, and so, like, I feel like there's going to be more variation within these three classes that we just don't know how that works.
Right.
But, like, hopefully, like you said, as you level up in the game, like the classes clearly start, or these subclasses clearly start branching into different directions and different roles with the different powers and the way the stats, you slowly start to see the effect of the stats as that accumulates, that hopefully, like when the actual game comes out, when you hit max level, like those subclasses will feel very distinct from one another, like, and that even like different people within the same subclass could feel very distinct with the way their gear can emphasize different powers. So it's like my gear could all be focused around making my knife ability more effective, whereas like some other guy could be like, I'm a hunter and I use like my grenade constantly because that's how my gear is worked out.
Yeah, and
I've leveled up my grenade stuff.
And I tried all three of them. I didn't play them all as extensively as you did. You leveled up everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I played my hunter by far the most. I basically only got the Warlock and Titan to level 8 and just kind of stopped there.
Okay.
And then I played enough of the alpha at that point that I was able to get them to level 8, like both of them in like 2 hours each.
Nice. So. And I liked the Warlock a lot. That was kind of my
Warlock player of choice, my second so far. Favorite.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. I really felt just it intuitively made sense to me, but I didn't get to play as much with the Hunter as I would have liked. But, you know, that's also, it's something that I kind of wanted to leave to the game itself was
sure.
I'm really interested in seeing what this is when you have the full suite of features and whatnot.
Yeah.
And time to level everything up, because obviously one of the frustrations here is you'll get all this loot for like level 12 and you're level 8.
It's like, you know, I'm doing this playing the fucking strike mission over and over and over again, and I got 2 blue drops. So for those who don't know, in this kind of like loot structure, there's, you have like different colors are assigned with different rarities and like power of gear. So it goes like white, green, blue, purple, orange. It's like all my hunter eventually, everything he had was green and like my level green, but it's like I had this blue helmet and this blue chest piece that was like both of them were level 11 gear. It was like they were so powerful compared to what I had, and I couldn't put it on because they capped it at level 8. It's like those fucking assholes. You cap it at level 8, but you don't cap like the gear that drops at level 8. So it's like I kept on picking up all this shit. It was like, this looks awesome, but I can't use it.
But that's, you know, that's a good complaint to have.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it just makes me want to play the game so much more. It's like, I want to be able to get this higher level gear.
And I think, you know, you played the alpha a lot more than me, and I think part of it for me was that I was enjoying it so fucking much. I kind of didn't want to spoil myself on it. I just kind of wanted to wait until there was more.
I had a moment when I was playing the alpha where like I had this path in front of me of like, either I take the red pill and I wake up and don't play and I forget I played the alpha, or I take the blue pill and I see how far this fucking rabbit hole goes and oh my god, did I take that blue pill because I played so fucking much.
And I played a lot of it, and all I want to do right now is go home and play more of it, even though you can't.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it's so good. I want to talk a little bit about the competitive multiplayer.
Okay, sure.
There's so little of it, you cannot make a judgment, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was the only part of Destiny that didn't grip me, and in fact, I found it pretty dull and boring. They just had, basically, its territories.
Yeah, they call it...
Or domination.
Yeah, it's domination. Yeah, it's a territory control map.
Yeah, they call it control in this.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It's domination in Call of Duty. But... And they have two maps. I only ever got to see one of them, which was the one on Earth.
Yeah, and it seemed like, because I played quite a bit of the multiplayer, because I did enjoy it. It was my least favorite part, but I did like it. Although I didn't like it at first. It took me a while. But it was like, for whatever reason, that Earth map came up probably like 80% of the time.
Okay.
I think I only played on the Moon map like twice.
Okay. And I think, you know, maybe if the alpha was a week long, I would have taken the time to get to know it better, but it didn't hurt me. I didn't like it, and with the limited time, I would rather have played the other stuff, so that's what I did. But it felt really kind of awkwardly low-key. The guy whose voice was talking to you was really kind of just soft and not all that interesting.
Yeah, it's not Halo announcer, dude. No. Like, I didn't mind his voice, but...
I didn't mind it, but it was like, it didn't give energy to anything.
Yeah, it's like I mean this is just true of any game. It's like when I start the match, I want to hear that dude just like Slayer, and it's like, okay,
right.
I know what I'm playing. I'm into this already.
Sure, and I think it was also just the gameplay felt fairly slow. I wasn't running into enemies all that much. I didn't intuitively get what the shooting was like in multiplayer. It's much faster than Halo is, so I was like,
die. The multiplayer is very different from Halo multiplayer.
So that just was off-putting. And not in a bad way. It's just that, you know, it's an alpha. It's limited. I didn't feel like I had the time to invest in this so far. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think it was a very interesting variation on domination, especially because I've been playing Titanfall, which has fantastic variations on every kind of multiplayer matchmaking there is. So, you know... I was kind of thinking of that. But so it's the only part of Destiny that wasn't up to snuff for me, but you know, it's only one game type. It's a game type that is only intermittently good, I think. It's good in some games and it's bad in others. I would like to be able to play this with Slayer or Capture the Flag or something like that and feel what that's like. And see what other maps are like. Because I didn't love this map, I didn't hate it or anything, but it's a part of the game that it's such a small sliver. I would have to play more of it.
Yeah, for me, like, I really wish that they had just, like, a normal team deathmatch mode as the multiplayer, because I don't typically like territories modes, and I didn't particularly like, you know, I still had fun playing it, but I didn't love that was the mode that I had to play. Though I did really like the map, because I felt like, especially once you play it enough, you know, every different class has their different movement ability, and that sort of, like, really affects the way you play the game, especially when I played it with different classes and I sort of saw... Okay, like, this is how a Titan might approach this map, whereas, like, the Hunter is sort of, like, leapfrogging over walls and shit. But, like, for me, I thought what was really interesting about the multiplayer is that when I was playing the multiplayer, this goes back to, like, my MMO experience, is that I had, the core feeling of me playing the multiplayer was not the same kind of feeling I had when I would go into a match in Call of Duty or a match in a Halo game. It felt like when I would queue up for PvP, player versus player, in World of Warcraft. That it's like... This isn't just me playing this multiplayer game. This is me going in as this character playing these PvP modes for something. So it's like you're getting PvP currency, these crucible marks in the game. You're getting crucible reputation. And that's like in the full game, that would be used as another method by which you can gain better gear and better loot is by playing the multiplayer, getting those crucible marks, completing those challenges, getting better reputation, and then cashing that in at the crucible vendor, which they had there for the high level, like, purple gear. And so, like, that, it kind of defeated, you know, some of that was sucked out of the beta because, or the alpha, because you couldn't get any of that gear because, it was all level 20 stuff. It was like, I thought it was a very interesting feeling that was like, this has competitive multiplayer in it, but it has it in it in sort of, again, in like a mix between what a game like World of Warcraft has in competitive multiplayer and a game like Halo has in competitive multiplayer, and this weird merging of the two. So it's like the fact that you bring your own weapons and gear and stuff in. I'm also curious, like, it'd be interesting for Bungie to sort of like detail what is the kind of stuff you specifically you bring into multiplayer with your character and what kind of stuff you don't. Because they specifically said there are no level advantages, so presumably... like your health is whatever your health is, and it's not like, you know, oh, I'm higher level so I have higher health. But it's like, I'm curious how much the stats affect it, how much the stats on your gear affect it. If, like, you know, they make all pulse rifles do the same damage and all the automatic rifles do the same damage, or if they give you some leeway with that kind of stuff. I think that would be really interesting to see, because I don't know quite how much that changes based on what you bring into the multiplayer with you.
Right, and maybe the multiplayer, the PvP specifically, is just the one part of Destiny so far that is MMO in such a way that I don't intuitively get it just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you're saying there. That all sounds interesting. And either way, it's not like I played those couple multiplayer matches and I'm like, I'm not playing multiplayer when it comes out. No, I'm excited to play
and
more.
And also,
of that,
if you didn't play multiplayer when it came out, like, again, going back to the MMO comparison, like, that's a totally legitimate way to play the game. That,
right.
Like, you know, I barely engaged with PvP in WoW because it just wasn't my thing. Because I was much more of a PvE player versus environment player, which is mostly, like, you know, co-op and single-player stuff. It's like, you could play Destiny for, like, dozens, if not hundreds of hours, hypothetically, when the actual game comes out, just doing the gear grind, like the loot grind with the strike missions and the campaign and the co-op and the exploration and that side, and just to completely ignore that PvP exists and not even bother with it. It's like,
sure, because
that's totally fine. Like,
because
you're not missing anything.
Here's the thing, in that strike, the co-op multiplayer, online multiplayer, is fantastic. You can, that its co-op is so integral to how that strike just plays, and it's so fun, and it's so interesting, the different kind of people you work with and how that affects how you play.
Yeah.
That I had a really fun time with as a multiplayer experience. So it just feels like, it feels like Destiny is going to be a fucking steal at $60.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I mean, I am so excited for this. And the crazy thing is, we don't have long to wait. We've got a month until the beta.
Yeah.
Then we don't have all that long until the game itself. So they're parsing it out. They're teasing us. But
yeah,
it's
like,
not...
I'm really curious how much, like, what that beta is going to be, like, how much content's going to be in it.
But here's the question that I think will define this whole conversation, Sean.
Okay.
If the beta was just exactly the alpha and the same content again, would you still play it?
Yeah.
Just for hours and hours and hours?
Yeah, I would, like...
Yes.
Especially because I would have to start with new characters, so I'd be like, fucking great. Like,
yeah.
Now, it's like, it sucks that I have to do it again, but it's like, I have to do it again.
I'm going to hear Peter Dinklage say, that wizard came from the moon. So many times.
It's the hive, yeah.
All right, so there's going to be a lot more to talk about.
Yeah,
we're going to
talk about this. I could just talk about Destiny for fucking forever.
Well, and the thing is, we're going to talk about Destiny for at least one more full episode when the beta comes out.
Yeah.
Then probably for several episodes when the game comes out. So we'll have a lot of Destiny talk this year.
I mean, fuck it. If we want to, we can just make the next podcast Destiny Alpha Talk too.
Sure. I mean, hey, you know what? By the time Destiny comes out, we're also going to be having weekly Doctor Who discussions.
Oh,
so
God, yeah.
It's going to become a fucking just madhouse on this show.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway, that's it for this week. Destiny Alpha, if you didn't play it, we probably just pissed you off for the last hour.
Yeah. And, but, you know, if you have a PS4, I think everyone with a PS4 gets into the beta, like, that's pre-order the game or whatever,
PS3
right?
Also.
Oh, cool.
It's on the PS3, too. I'm curious to see what
those previous-gen versions of the game are going to be like.
Yeah, because we didn't say the graphics on this are fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah, they're great. And, obviously, part of that is, like, the art design is fantastic, as it has always been with, like, Bungie's games. But, yeah, the graphics are very top-notch, especially a lot of the lighting and the reflections, particularly on, like, bodies of water, have, like, these really, really detailed reflections I've never seen in a game before, where it almost kind of freaked me out sometimes, where I'd see it in the corner of my eye, and I was like, what the fuck is that? And it's like, oh, wait, that's just, like, my reflection in this water.
Right.
It's like, I'm not used to it reflecting light like that accurately.
I think more than any other cross-gen game we've seen for next-gen systems so far, it looks next-gen developed.
Yeah. But Bungie has talked a lot of game and interviews that I've seen about their engine for Destiny being really scalable. But that's, I mean, a lot of people are talking about that. So I'm curious to see, like, how much of that is true, that it's like,
right,
if the previous gen games or versions are obviously going to work worse, but to see, like, how well they replicate that experience, I'm curious.
Yeah. So this year of Destiny, man. Good game. All right.
It will be. It will be.